This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Episode number 126. What did you watch this week? Did you see that little hiccup there?
I did, yeah.
Like it just stopped, yeah. And suddenly it jumped forward?
No, I didn't notice that. Oh, just did it again. My name is Mike.
My name is John.
We're going to talk about shows and stuff we watched this week and other stuff.
Yes. Stuff and shows and other stuff and yeah.
So, I know this isn't TV show related, but I wanted to
bring Veto.
Sorry, what?
Veto.
What about Veto?
You said it's not TV show related. I'm vetoing it.
Oh, I thought you were talking like some guy named Veto.
No. My cousin Veto. Anyway.
I was at the State Theater last night for Dawes.
What is Dawes?
It's a rock band.
Okay.
They're good. It's a great show. So we were there, and I got an email about Aziz Ansari coming to the State Theater literally 2 weeks from yesterday, from the night of the show.
Yep.
And tickets had on going to sell yet. They were literally announcing it right then and there, which 2 weeks out isn't that big of a time frame. Yeah. And yeah. But we saw him in the past at the State Theater.
I got the same email at the same time, and I looked at it and went, yeah. September 28th?
Yeah.
That's coming right up here.
I thought that was the on-sale date at first.
Right.
Because I didn't even see a poster at the State Theater. I was there looking around at the posters to see if there was one on the wall. Because they had posters for everything through the end of the year, and I did not see that anywhere. But there was something in the email that caught me funny. It said
there were a couple of things that caught me funny.
It was said that there were no cell phones, smartwatches, or recording devices or cameras of any kind allowed in the building. Now, right. I've been to a lot of places lately that they don't allow you to do recordings, but they know everyone has a cell phone, and at this point in time, it's they can't control that, in my opinion.
Right.
They can't control that, but they're like, just ask you, please don't record anything, you know, we would appreciate it.
And remember when we saw Aziz the first time?
Yes.
They announced that.
Yes.
And then he walked out on stage and said, everyone take your pictures now.
Yes.
I'm going to do poses.
Yes.
And then you're going to put your damn phones away and not take pictures.
But he did this whole bit, though, about how, like, why are you taking pictures?
He was the announcer.
He's like, yes, that was actually the funny part. He announced everything off stage, too. But he did this whole bit about, like, I'm a stand-up comedian. I'm literally walking around on stage. What are you taking a picture of? After you take one, what's rest with the others?
Yeah. You know, like, what are you going to caption it? This was the joke. Huh, yeah.
So he goes, so I'll do a series of poses. You can all take a picture and then put your phones away. And then he did.
Yep.
He did a series of poses. But this time, it says that if you bring a phone or smartwatch in, they're going to put it in a locked yonder pouch.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait a second. Everyone's going to put their phones in a big bag that they're going to lock up at the front. And it says, if you need it unlocked, then you can bring it to a yonder pouch location in the lobby to unlock it.
Which means that you get to keep it with you.
Yeah.
But it's in this pouch.
Yeah. And then it says, and then after that, it says, you will maintain possession of your phone at all times.
Yeah.
So I had to look this up.
Yeah.
And essentially, this is what it reminds me of. My mom's old cigarette case when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because it's like a little pouch that you, like, put your phone in or your smartphone watch in, and it closes at the top. But instead of having, like, the clip thing, it's got a magnet, and you need the special machine to, like, lock it and unlock it.
Like when we worked at the video store and you had the games locked
up.
And,
yes,
or the pornos.
Right, exactly. But, yeah, so, I mean, that's what it reminds me of. Like, you know, say where it flips at the top, except, like, you know, my mom's had the little clip thing, but this doesn't. You know, it locks. And you can put it in your pocket still, apparently. Why bring it in with you at all, then?
Right.
Because if you get caught, and then it said, if you're caught with a phone out during the performance, you will be automatically ejected.
Now,
I would not want to work security for this because you know that there are going to be people who are like, oh, my babysitter might need to call me and I need to be able to contact my kids and blah, blah, blah. You know, those fucking whine-ass fucking parents.
Exactly.
Who just, they don't need to talk to their babysitter, but they love using that as an excuse to buck the system.
Well, 10 years ago when cell phones weren't like they were now, was it 10 years ago? Can we say that? Or is it more?
Oh, it was more.
Okay. 15 years ago when we were kids, our parents went out and that was it.
15 years ago, you were not a kid.
I know, but then I just skipped that and went to when we were kids. So, you know.
Yeah.
27 years ago, our parents just went out and did stuff, and you didn't worry about, you know, oh, if the babysitter needs to get a hold of me, the numbers are on the fridge.
Right.
Use the home phone.
Yeah. Here's the number for the restaurant we're going to. Here's the number for the club we're going to. Here's the number for the hotel I'm banging your mom at.
Right. Exactly. So... it just, it's interesting to me. Now, the State Theater, maximum capacity, I don't know, 1,000 maybe?
Maybe.
Yeah. Okay, let's just say it's 500. Who's supplying the Yonder pouch? Is this something that Aziz Ansari and his crew are coming around with? Is this something they've set up? Is this a State Theater thing?
Because
I didn't have to do it last night.
No.
But, like, you know, when you're in a small venue like this even, if you have 500 people in there, you need to have 500 Yonder pouches.
Well... I'm gonna point out one thing that got me thinking in that email, and that's that it said right under it, Aziz Ansari, State Theater, September 28th, testing out new material.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Oh, he is.
Yes.
Yes.
So that would lead me to believe that he's the one providing the Yonder pouches because he's probably like, I'm testing out new shit. I don't want these fucking hillbillies from Maine letting people hear my stuff or posting it or anything like that. You know, three of them probably have internet, so...
So do you think maybe that's what it is that he's like doesn't want? Because I get it. He doesn't want his shit recorded.
Right.
He doesn't want you putting it on the internet, especially if it's new.
But even if it's new material, he's trying.
Right. Okay. But even if it's established material. But like, all right. So he must not be going to any small venues then. Because if he went to say,
dude, this is the State Theater in Portland, Maine.
But that's anything but small venues.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean.
Okay,
sorry,
yeah.
I forgot the but. Because like, even if he went to like. Like, he's not going to say he sells out a 1,000-seat arena.
Yeah. Oh, that was the other thing that really bothered me in the email, and the reason that I would not go to see that. Will call only. So you don't get assigned seats. You show up there.
Oh, it's probably all general admission.
You buy a ticket, and it's will call only.
No. Will call only means you can buy your tickets online, but they don't have enough time to print and mail them to you.
Mm.
That's what it is. So you have to pick them up there because literally the show is 2 weeks away.
Gotcha.
So that's why it's will call only. They don't have time to mail. They can't guarantee that they'll get there to you in time.
I'm still not going to go to it.
I would go because I find him funny.
Yeah.
But I just went on his website. He literally has one tour date on his website. December.
Well, yeah, because he's got to get ready for it.
Like maybe that. I don't know. Hold on. Yeah, I don't. I mean, I'm on my... Yeah, there's, like, no tour dates listed. It says tour, nothing. Oh, wait, this website hasn't been updated since 2014. Never mind. I just saw new tour dates, 2014. Oh, okay.
Wow.
So he needs a new website or something.
Or a new public.
Oh, window. Hold on. Here's something in email that came out two days ago.
Okay.
Aziz Ansari making comedy comeback after Me Too accusations.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well,
so that's what it is. He hasn't been around because I haven't heard from him about him.
I haven't heard from him in a while.
I don't know. I think he's funny. I don't care.
He's got my number. I mean,
but you know what I mean? Like on TV even. Yeah. Even if you go on his Twitter, he hasn't posted anything on his Twitter since October 1st, 2017.
All making more sense now.
Yeah. That is kind of making sense. So he's
so that, he had that's that the show. Other thing too. This now Master of None.
Yeah,
but now I'm thinking this has the potential to be a very bad show. I don't think I'd want to be involved in because there's a high probability that people are going to be there heckling.
Yeah,
people are going to be there booing him.
Yeah.
If this is him re-emerging after Me Too accusations and he hasn't done anything since October of last year, then. I know that recently Louis C.K. did the same kind of thing, and there was a lot of blowout afterwards. you know, people like, oh, I can't believe he came back out and he was on stage, blah, blah. So, yeah, I'm definitely all set with.
If you go on the Live Nation website, there's only two shows announced. Rhode Island, yeah, and then State Theater in Portland.
So he's doing the small venues to dip his foot in the water.
Maybe. I mean, he's done State Theater before.
Right. But that was an announced, it was part of a...
Oh, we bought those tickets like in January for, you know, up and cut for May, I think it was.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, we bought those, you know, a few months in advance. Oh, the name of the show is called Working Out New Material.
Hmm.
Because that's the name of the show in Auburn as well. I mean, in Rhode Island as well. So,
cool.
Anyways, right. we went off on a tangent. Anyway, yes. So these Yonder bags. So I wonder if we're going to see those at other shows.
Possibly.
Maybe he is worried about getting heckled so badly that he doesn't want it being recorded and put on the internet.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
But if this is the way
more things are now becoming clearer.
Yeah. If this is the way of how things are going to be though, when you attend a live event. I mean, are you going to have 20,000 seat arenas that are going to have Yonder bags for everybody?
You know, honestly, after that Weird Al, was it Weird Al? No, it was the concert that we went to standing up on the pier with the...
The Soul Asylum,
yeah,
and all that stuff. Yeah.
And remember that one kid who like leaned right in front of you with his GoPro and you're like, dude, no, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd have no problem with Yonder bags for shit right. like that.
Right. Yeah, you know? Me too.
Just sit there and enjoy the concert. You don't have to record everything in your life. You don't have to Snapchat it and fucking Periscope it. And yeah. So.
I mean, I last night at Dawes, I took like 4 pictures, put my phone away till the intermission. Then I looked at it and posted a thing on Instagram, a collage. Yeah. I don't know. I'm just curious if this is how things are going to be because – like back in the day, like when you went to go to wrestling, everyone could bring a camera because cameras didn't record anything.
Right.
And now they're so paranoid. And some places have embraced it. You know, they don't care that fans are recording their stuff and putting it out there on Twitter and social media and this and that. Because to them, it's like free advertising or free publishing. Like, hey, you know, this concert looks awesome on Twitter. I want to see them when they come to my town. And then you have others, you know, like this or whoever that are just, you know, not.
Yep.
I don't know.
Well, that's our tangent for the night.
Yeah, right.
Our one tangent. Yeah,
no, it'll be more than that. On another side note.
Okay.
Tosh was pretty awesome. I'd go see him again.
Yeah, I would definitely go see him again.
All right, let's talk about stuff we watched.
Yes.
I didn't watch a ton because between schoolwork and then I went away for 4 nights. We went to Nova Scotia and Prince Edward Island.
And by we, he means himself, his wife, everybody but me.
Me and my wife and my child, one of my children.
Yeah. I did not go on this. I'm not part of the we.
Correct, John. You are not part of the we of me and my family on a vacation. But we did. I did manage to watch catch up on the 3 episodes of Sinner I hadn't watched since last time we recorded. And I did manage to watch the last 2 episodes of Castle Rock.
Excellent.
I watched some Anne with an E. I did fit in 2 episodes of Iron Fist.
Oh, okay.
And I watched the premiere of American Horror Story Apocalypse.
Okay.
So I have those things to talk about shows-wise.
I also have the 3 episodes of Sinner, the 2 episodes of Castle Rock that finished off that season. I watched the premiere of Kidding. The new one with Jim Carrey.
Yep.
I watched all of Iron Fist season 2.
Jesus.
And I think that pretty much covers it. There were a couple of things that
I watched a couple other things.
Ended up on my DVR that were NBC promos premiere. Like they did one with the cast of Brooklyn Nine-Nine going around the NBC lot and talking about the upcoming shows and then showing clips from the upcoming fall shows.
Okay. So,
those were fun to watch. I'm not going to go into any kind of
Brooklyn Nine-Nine going to NBC is kind of weird, right?
Because NBC saved them from cancellation. Yeah. Like Andy Samberg was like, it's good to be back here because he was on Saturday Night Live
for so long.
And, yeah, Terry Crews wanted to meet celebrities. And he's like, dude, you are a celebrity. But, yeah, it was good. It was fun.
Nice.
And then I watched 4 movies and a shit ton of trailers and have a bunch of new stuff.
Yeah, you got more to talk about than I do.
Sure do.
I'd like to start off with Sinner, if we could. So, I remember in episode 5,
yep.
you talking about how when Bill Pullman woke up in the hotel and he goes, they look at the camera and they have the timestamp on there. And so I took it a step further.
Okay.
So he's standing there looking at it and they've rewound it and he's hit play. And when he hits play, it's 3:54:23 is the timestamp. Tell me exactly what time this happened. Exactly. I don't know. Around 4 o'clock. Okay. They cut back to the camera and now the timestamp says 4:01:03. So I go back and I timed it from the time they showed the timestamp till he asked about exactly what time until they showed the timestamp again. It was 15.86 seconds.
And yet 7 minutes had elapsed.
Continuity-wise, they just said, fuck it.
Well, not only that, but correct me if I'm wrong. Like, when we see the 3 minutes and 54 seconds, or 3:54 a.m., and then when we see 4:01, like 3:54, he's standing up out of the car.
Yeah.
And then 4:01, he's still standing there outside the car.
Yeah.
So, like, eight minutes of him just standing there.
Yeah.
Dude, I don't remember the last time I just stood anywhere for 8 minutes.
God,
unless it was like in line at a grocery store or something.
Right, yeah.
I certainly never stepped out of my vehicle and said, I'm just going to stand here for 8 minutes.
But see, that's the thing is that you're standing in line at the grocery store. You're performing a purpose.
Mm.
Just standing outside your car in a glazed gaze.
Societal norms say that I am not allowed to move myself forward in this line.
So I wasn't surprised watching this episode when the locals asked him to leave.
Yeah.
The local sheriff, because he's just getting too close.
Right, right.
Uncovering too much. Stirring up too much dust.
Yes, stirring them turds.
Yeah, and then, you know.
But his daughter, you know, wanted him to stick around, because she's like, no, stir the turd.
Yeah, yeah. The sheriff is not the daughter.
No. What I'm saying, you said the locals.
Okay, yeah, sorry, the sheriff. I'm talking about the sheriff. But then, yeah, his friend, too, was just like, you should have left a long time ago.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, the Beacon, the leader. Have we established he's dead yet?
I don't know.
I'm assuming he is.
This season of The Sinner is simultaneously more convoluted and less confusing. Like, it's more straightforward, but it's completely more convoluted. And I don't know if that's because they're figuring in this whole cultish aspect to it, which isn't really a cult, but it kind of is, but it isn't, but it is.
It's a thing. It's basically...
I really like the first season better than this one.
Yes,
I'm going to say that right now.
Okay, so the Beacon is egomaniacal...
cult leader.
Cult leader. Essentially. And, of course...
He passes it off as like new age help guru.
Right. Kind of. Where basically it's like it's a type of therapy,
mm-hmm.
but it's a physical therapy.
Yeah.
Where people
get their asses kicked.
Yeah. Like, you know, it's very aggressive. You know, like, oh, well, they're just having a session and he got a little carried away. But, you know, it's all right, right? Because it's part of the process and he had a breakthrough and he needed that. You have a 7-inch gash on your leg.
Somebody watched Fight Club a few too many times.
Yeah,
and said,
basically, yeah.
I'm going to start a therapy based on this.
Yeah, that's essentially what they did.
Yeah.
So I wasn't surprised when they wanted him to leave, and I wasn't surprised when he stayed to continue investigate. And then we see what happens with Julian, where Julian's the local cop girl there. I can't think of her name. Anyways, her friend who joined the cult, Julian, is actually her child.
Yeah, we find that out.
Yes.
Definitively this
time. And then the Beacon... You know, because she makes the comment there to him, like,
I think it's Heather.
Whatever. You know, she's pregnant, but she's on the ropes, but she knows what she needs to do. And he's like, oh, no, we're going to raise the child together and da 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 da. So I get the feeling he wanted to kill the kid
mm-hmm.
eventually, like he did the cow.
You mean the Beacon?
Yeah.
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 Yeah, like raise it up so that it could be sacrificed.
Be slaughtered. Yeah, yeah.
Because then he's talking about how like everything's going to change now.
Right. And then in the next episode, episode 6, you know, they find the deposition that girl gave when they made the claims against the doctor for the malpractice.
Right.
That they ended up institutionalizing her about it. Mm-hmm. So he finds her deposition in the recording about the going-ons in the compound, and basically it confirms that, yeah, no, this other girl had the baby. And
he plays it for Vera.
Yes.
And she like flips out. You get out of my house. I don't want you. And then suddenly just goes, okay, I'll tell you everything.
Yeah. I'll tell you everything.
Yeah. Like all he had to do was play it for 5 more seconds. She's like, I'll tell you everything. He's like, okay, I'll stop now.
But, again, like the therapy sessions were physically violent against each other. And now she's having like issues where she's like, I think what we're doing is wrong. And the leader's like pissed off because she's questioning him. And then there's a therapy session coming. And basically this local guy comes to town and him and his friends beat the crap out of this other girl. You know, that's what they do. Right. Their therapy sessions. Anyways. Okay. Yeah. So he is a leader that basically is pimping women out is how I look at it.
Pimping women out and beating the crap out of people, including women.
Yeah. And letting folks from town come who aren't members to partake in these therapy sessions.
Therapy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so when the Beacon had to go out of town for whatever reason, you know, was it Vera?
Yeah.
Yeah. Vera. She cancels the session.
Yeah.
And then
she tells the guy, she's like, no, and the guy gets really pissed at her. He's like, who the hell do you think you are?
Yeah, but they leave.
Yeah.
And when the Beacon shows back up, he's like, how dare you cancel that? And the baby's crying, and he turns to the baby and goes, shut up.
I know. Now, we have to go back here for a second here, because when she gave birth to the baby, she started hemorrhaging bad.
Oh, yeah, that was my greatest fear, whatever reason. When Kate had Wesley, I had this dream that she was going to bleed out and die.
Yeah, well, I thought she had.
I thought apparently, she had too.
Apparently she didn't die.
Right.
She hemorrhaged really bad.
Yeah.
They got her inside to the main room or whatever. Right. And then we see later on that she's like having postpartum depression.
Oh, massively. She doesn't want it. She's not associated with the baby at all, but Vera
she
is.
She says she doesn't like it. Yeah. And then we see different stages of Vera. Like at first she's holding him and one of the other women's like, you know, why are you holding him? And she's like, wait a minute, are you lactating? And Vera's like, I don't know what you're talking about. It just happened automatically. So why is that happening? You're spending too much time around the kid. And then later on she finds Vera nursing the baby.
Yeah.
And she's like, what are you doing? And she's like, it's just once. It just happened once. He just latched. And
excuse me.
So now.
Yeah. And I will take it that Vera probably felt like there was no other option.
Right.
And I don't hold her accountable for anything that happened.
No. It was a little.
But.
Hand that rocks the cradle, but.
But she is just very social, very attached to this child.
Then. Right. So now,
and the leader makes the comment. Guy. He just goes. The baby just shut up, and then he tries to talk again. The baby's crying. He turns to shut up. Like tells the baby twice to shut up, like it's going to understand,
like it's a normal person.
And he doesn't yell shut up. He's not even yelling. He's just talking in a quick and pan. Shut up.
Shut up.
Just shut up. And then he's like, "Give me the baby," and she's like, "Well, no, it can't be away from blah blah blah." And he's like, "It doesn't matter much longer, anyways."
Yeah.
And so that's clearly he plans on killing the baby, like they did the baby cow.
Yeah. He told her that she's getting too attached, and it's affecting her ability to run this place in his absence.
Yeah.
So he's going to keep the baby with him from now on, and she's like, "Oh, but we'll be keeping you up all night because we have to come in and change his diapers and feed him." And he's like, "I don't care."
Yeah.
Boom.
But his whole point is he's going to kill this kid. That's my feeling.
Yep.
So she brings the baby's basket with all the stuff and a nice cup of tea.
Yeah. And then we never get resolution on that.
Nope, not yet.
Nope. And that was the end of the, you know, episode 6.
Yeah.
All through episode 7, we still didn't get any resolution on this.
Well, also in episode 6, though, what's kind of important is that we find out that the DA is crooked in the town. Of course.
Of course.
And, you know, he blackmails Bill Pullman. I can't think of his character's name. I'm not going to try.
Yeah.
Blackmails him to get Julian Walker's charges dropped to manslaughter and have him kicked to family court where he should be the whole time.
Right.
And because he brings up, all these payments you received and based on that girl getting shipped to the insane asylum and these other cases, you know. And the DA, of course, tries to laugh him off at first and then, things are going his way.
Yeah.
Bill Pullman's way. And, of course, episode 6 ends with this figure coming in abducting Julian.
Yes. Now, also, in one of these two episodes, they found there's a lake out by Mosswood.
Yes.
And they pulled a car up out of the lake with a Jane Doe's body in it.
Yeah.
Very much disintegrated.
And
like, it's just skeletal remains.
And she thinks this is her friend,
yeah.
Heather, or whatever, you know. And that's the assumption you go by until the beginning of episode 7 when you find out that she's alive.
Yeah.
And a lot, you find out a lot in this.
Yeah.
She's alive.
Yeah.
She was hiding out at this monastery, basically.
Marin is her name.
Marin. She was hiding out at this monastery, basically. Then she came back to the compound to get Julian. And Vera's like, you're not taking him.
Right.
You're not taking him anywhere. He's my kid. He's not your kid. You haven't been around.
You've been in rehab. You're a druggie. You're not fit to...
Et cetera, et cetera. So then she sets this plan in motion.
Marin,
to get Julian back.
Yep. Because there are some at the compound who still believe in her. They're like, oh, where have you been? We missed you. You know, you were getting your ass beaten on a regular basis and you disappeared and now you're back and we want to reunite you with your kid.
Yeah.
And at least two people really agreed with her.
Because we go back to the first episode, basically, and it's the couple that had taken him that Julian kills. You know, she got them to take him to bring him to her. Mm-hmm. When we see... when they found the storage locker, whatever, in Canada with all the stuff in it, she was the one living in it.
Yep.
So they wrapped up a few things.
Yes.
They tied a little bow on a few things. And obviously she's the one that abducted Julian at the end of episode 6. You know, and but now they're on the run together.
Yep. Because she's going to take him home. And it's very similar, like, they did the nice flashback there to the first episode where, you know, he's sitting in the back of the car and he's all excited like a little dog. And he's like, oh, when we get there, what are we going to do? And, you know, they're driving him to his mother. And now that his mother has him and she's driving him in the van, he's doing the same kind of thing. You know, oh, what are we going to do? Why are we going this way? Mosswood's the other way.
Yeah. Who are you? Why? You know, and then finally he's like, I'm your mother. I'm your mother. And then he runs off into the woods.
Yeah.
And then she tracks him down. But, of course, the police find the van on the side of the road, and now they have to keep running. And she sings him a song. That's how he knew he was her mother.
Hey, Mike.
Yeah.
Single police officer finds an abandoned vehicle matching the description of an Amber Alert on the side of the road on a snowy side of the road.
Yeah.
Sees footprints heading off into the woods. Yeah. Doesn't call that in. Just calls in the van and leans on it.
Right. That's accurate.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
Or how about at the police station, police officer picks up her cell phone and calls and says, I need an Amber Alert a 13-year-old boy.
That's not how it works.
Last seen in a brown van. Okay, thanks. Where was the description of him? Where was the person that he was with? Where were his physical characteristics? What was his name?
Not to mention, it was greater than 2 hours since abduction. They couldn't put an Amber Alert out anyways.
I had
going to dismiss all that. Yeah, and I saw the same thing when, like, Bo Pullman's, like, saying, he didn't run away. The mother abducted him. And then the sheriff's like, dun, dun, dun. And then you hear, I need an Amber Alert. And I'm like, no, that's not how it works. You have 2 hours from the time of abduction. You have to think the child is in danger. You have to think, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, there's just many factors.
And let's also not forget the fact that this is his parent. So if we were to look at birth certificates, which I don't even know if there is one because he was born in the compound.
No, remember, there is. They're forged.
That's right. That's right. So he's with his parent. He's with his legal parent. So that's going to have a hard time holding up.
Yeah, well, it's just, it doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. But it was good.
Yeah.
How did it end? I'm trying to remember the ending.
Oh, she's dead.
That's right. It ends with the mother being dead.
Sorry, I thought I muted that.
That's okay. It ends with mom being dead. Looks like her throat's been slit. She's lying in the middle of, like, the road or something.
No, she had a gunshot in her chest.
Oh, gunshot.
It was, like, one shot in her chest. Yeah, because... Heather was all excited. She had talked to her on the phone and she's like, you know, you can come in and I can help you. You know, I'm sorry. That's all my fault. And Marin's like, no, throw him off the trail. Give me some time to escape. Do me this favor. Yeah. And she's like, I can't do that. I'm a cop. And then they go out to find her where she was and she's dead and Julian's not around.
Well, the compound people knew where they were.
Right.
Where she was. So how many episodes this season? Eight?
Eight.
So we got one more.
Yeah.
Okay.
Honestly, like, it's been good in some places, but I was far more compelled in the first episode. Like, the first season, we had that whole weird thing with Bill Pullman and his wife and his mistress.
I'm glad we don't have that, though.
No, I'm glad they didn't repeat it, but I felt like he had more depth of a character back then.
Yeah.
Than like, just, like, this guy who seems like he's half dead.
Right.
That they don't want him around, then they do, then they don't, then they do.
Then they don't?
Yeah. Yeah.
Not a bad show, though.
No. No.
But just not as good as last season.
You know me.
I'm glad it's eight episodes. Let's be honest. You know, I'm at the point now where I'm really enjoying these 8 to 13 episode shows, seasons of shows. Yeah. And I don't need the old school 20-something episodes anymore because you have too many lulls. They can't, you know, like it's...
Unless you can binge it, it's too much.
I think it's easier to tell a story now with a finite number of episodes.
Yep.
Then, all right, we have to do 20 episodes this season, so what are we going to do?
It's like this season of Iron Fist is 10 episodes. It's great. Yeah. They're able to tell their story and get it over with.
I've heard a lot of people saying how much they like this season of Iron Fist compared to, well, the first season, but like even the other Netflix shows, how great this season is. But we'll get to that.
Right.
So, I don't know.
So, The Sinner.
That was The Sinner.
Yep.
Want to close out Castle Rock?
Dude, there was so much to unpack in these two episodes. The first episode alone, I've got like, but I was doing like a play-by-play because I was trying to keep up with all the shit that was going. The ninth episode was probably my favorite episode so far.
I think it was mine as well. It told a lot.
Yes.
But then when you watch episode 10, I almost feel like, was episode 9 a lie?
That's the thing. That's what really bothered me the most, is they kind of undid all of episode 9.
Yeah.
All right. So episode 9 basically explains to us, the episode is called Henry Deaver.
So incidentally, in one description of this I watched, they call one Henry White Henry, and the other Henry Adopted Henry.
For ease of... Wow. That's awesome. So the way I did it in my notes.
Yeah.
Henry is Henry.
Yeah.
Henry is the guy that we've known
Henry's
all along.
Henry's the little black kid, and the kid is the kid.
Yes.
Yes.
The kid,
yep.
The boy, was the young black kid.
Young Henry.
In White Henry's universe.
Yes.
So you had the kid, which is the bad guy, whatever, that's been locked up.
Yeah.
You have the boy, which is young Henry,
yeah,
if you will, in this episode at least. And then Henry is the older man, you know, death row lawyer.
Yeah.
Type guy.
Okay. So eventually, essentially in this episode, we learn at the end of episode 8, he did say to Molly, that's where you died.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is he is saying that they're now unveiling that there's two realities.
Yes. That's essentially, they kind of hint that there are many of them, but we're concerned with two.
Right. So you have the reality that is White Henry.
Yep.
Or the kid.
The kid.
And you have the reality that is Henry's.
Yep.
And this is where it gets confusing. So this is the story. Essentially, episode 9, which is called Henry Deaver, is the story the kid is telling Molly about how he got here, how he got in Shawshank.
From his reality.
From in his reality. And basically what he says happened is, he is married. His wife, he thinks, is pregnant. He's a lawyer still. Oh, he's a doctor. He's a doctor.
He's working on Alzheimer's.
Oh, Alzheimer's. But he's a doctor.
Because his mother.
Yes. Yeah. His mother, we never see in this episode, she's living down in Florida because she did pack a bag, grab Henry, and leave.
Yes.
He gets called back to Maine because his dad died.
Yep.
So he gets back to Maine.
But he hated his dad.
Hated his dad, yeah. Rightfully, well, so did Henry.
Right.
So they get back to Maine. And I'm going to combine the two episodes,
now, hold
by
on.
The way.
You can combine them. But there were a couple of things in the beginning of this episode.
Okay,
he was talking about like weird prophecy stuff. There was a preacher's voiceover that was talking about curses.
Yeah.
And you see a train that plowed right into a school bus. You know,
yes.
Got like an overhead.
Well, it's telling us what's happened at Castle Rock.
Well, then we get the kid talking about how when he was a baby, his mother was trying to raise him, and she thought that he was possessed by the devil because he wouldn't stop crying. So one night, she choked him with a wooden hanger.
Yes.
And he died. But then he came back.
Right.
And so she decided suddenly he was a miracle.
Right.
So that kind of sets the stage for the supernatural premise of this whole thing.
Right. Which, by the way, the scene, they don't show her choking the baby. It's still disturbing.
It is still disturbing.
It was still really disturbing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because you hear the baby crying. She's got the wooden hanger.
Yeah.
She walks in, presses down, and then she walks out, and there's no more crying.
Right.
And then you hear the cry.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're right. Okay. Good. Thank you.
Yes.
So. All right. No. All right. So, essentially, the kid of the past 8 episodes that we've seen, whatever, is Ruth and the pastor's biological son.
Mm-hmm.
Who is alive,
Yep.
And his name is Henry Deaver.
Yep.
And, like we said, his mother left them. He's working on Alzheimer's. She's living down in Florida. His dad dies, so he comes up, and he runs into Molly, and they talk, and they're all like, oh, Henry, blah, blah, blah.
And Molly's very sane.
Molly's very sane, yes.
And her sister, Bridget, is yes. now the one who's selling houses.
Yes, they've switched roles.
Yep.
And Molly... So anyways, but basically Ruth did fall through grabbing Henry and fleeing to Boston, apparently, in 1991. And they left. And the pastor was not murdered by 12-year-old Molly.
Right.
In this scenario.
Molly is a council chair.
Yes.
In this reality.
Yep. But... Hold on.
There was a little bit of catching up with Molly. He's talking right. about how his mom's down in Sarasota.
Right.
They have a good relationship, but yeah. she's got Alzheimer's. That's why he's working on the thing that he cured a cat.
Yeah.
You know, cured right. the cat's brain. He, right. he thinks that he's made a breakthrough. So I think he's an engineer of some type.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So the pastor in this episode killed himself.
Yes.
Just like the warden killed himself at the beginning.
Yes.
So this is what leads him coming up here. Henry is going through his dad's house.
Yep.
Henry finds adopted boy, Henry, in a cage in the basement of dad's house.
As the young boy.
Yeah. But it's 2018, not 1991.
Right.
So now it's, because if you remember a few episodes ago, the boy said to Henry, like, don't you remember when I found you in that cage?
Mm-hmm.
Or, no, I could have left you in that basement.
Right.
And it was like, what?
Yep.
And then I'm thinking, like, oh, maybe it had something to do, because Henry originally, as a young boy, disappeared for a few days. And they found his dad on the lake, but alive. And then Henry reappeared in the center of the lake. And that's when Alan Pangborn found him.
Right.
So now, because, that's the other thing. Alan's one that calls White Henry and says, hey, your dad's dead.
Yeah.
So the sheriff is still alive in this reality as well.
Yep.
So, there is a lot.
Well, he finds the kid in the basement, and yep. now he's found some recordings of his father, the preacher, talking about how this kid is basically yep. the devil. He's talking about a curse. He's talking
Ever
about
the Ever since woods. He showed up,
yep,
the shit's gone bad. And yep. he showed up saying, I'm your son. You adopted me.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. So, this kid recognized the preacher as his father.
Yes.
Which is, again, the timelines are weird because... It seems like this preacher wouldn't have been the right age for that.
No, you're right. He wouldn't have been. Because this is 2018, he's saying this, and the preacher's still alive, but he definitely would be older.
Right.
But we don't know. Maybe adopted Henry was confused as to why his dad was older, but that's his dad.
It's also interesting to note that in this reality, which the times are supposed to be the same. It's supposed to be 2018 in both of them.
Right.
In this one, where the kid is Henry Deaver,
yeah.
there's no snow on the ground anywhere.
Right.
Nothing's frozen.
Right.
Whereas in the one that we've been watching all along, it's frozen.
It's winter.
Snowy.
Yeah.
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 Which it was still only like October, we find out at the end of the second episode.
Right.
So, because it says that Alan was killed in October of.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yes. Yes. So Henry finds the kid finds all these tapes that he listens to.
Yeah.
That his dad did. All these different recordings and everything. And he brings them to Molly, and then they talk about it. And then the
kid actually commented on, or the boy actually commented on it when he found the preacher. He was yeah. like, where's all the snow gone?
Yeah, yes.
There was snow here.
That's right.
There's this noise all around. I can't stand it.
Yes. He's complaining about the noise.
Yeah.
And was it? He burns down the wherever he gets taken, the asylum gets burned down. In both realities, it's now been burned down and people have died.
Yeah.
But we didn't have the mass shooting at the prison like we did in Henry's reality. We have. But he's in jail. They've arrested the kid. He's at the police station. But Molly somehow talks them into letting the kid take him because the kid touches Molly's hand
mm-hmm.
and she sees something.
Yep. Well, she also, this was interesting. She yeah. says that the things that the kid talked about, like the helicopter crash, the school bus crash, yep. those all happened decades ago.
91.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When she was a kid.
Right.
So how does he know about them?
Right.
Which was interesting.
So she takes him with him, and him and the kid, they head off, and the officer is going to follow them over and stay outside the house to make sure everything's okay. So Molly ditches the cop with the train, cutting, you know, jumping the train basically, so it's, you know, gets ahead of it. Mm-hmm. And then the kid's screaming about the noise, and they pull the car over, and the kid runs off into the woods. The young boy, Henry, runs off into the woods, and Molly and the kid go after him. And then the cop, Molly goes after him, and then the cop shows up and fires a warning shot in the air, which, no, that's not how it works.
Nobody does that anymore.
No. Molly touches the kid and can now all of a sudden, now that they're in the center of the woods where like the noise is the loudest, and she puts her hand on the kid and now they can see all these different realities or all these different times or whatever. And they're seeing.
So like it's nighttime for them, but suddenly it's daytime in their view.
Yeah.
And there's some girl in an old time dress with a knife.
Yeah. With a big old machete.
Yeah.
It's bloody.
And she looks all like panicked, like, oh, and then she runs off.
It's like you're seeing all these different people from all these different time frames that can. And it's they all can see each other,
right,
or whatever it is, and they're in full panic. And then Henry runs off, and then Molly catches up, and then Henry runs off again, and the kid's there. And then all of a sudden, Molly, while she's in the dream world, goes like, "Ugh!" and falls because apparently the warning shot went up in the air and came back down and hit her.
While she's looking up at the sky and sees two giant red suns.
Yeah.
In the sky.
Yeah, and it hits her in the stomach.
Yeah.
And she collapses and she's dead.
Yeah.
Hence where she died in the woods.
Right.
Where the kid sees her die. He chases Henry down. And catches.
He can now see the other one.
He can now see the other and catches up to him. And now he's like in the snowy world. And then you hear someone screaming Henry. And it's from the first episode where Sheriff Alan Pangborn finds Henry on the middle of the ice.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, now that's how the kid gets trapped in this alternate reality in 1991.
Yeah.
That's the story he's telling.
Really messed up.
Yeah. It was a good episode.
Oh, it was great.
They did a good job explaining it, way better than I could just do verbally. But they did a good job explaining it all. But this is how we get to the reality that we're in now, where the kid is then found by the warden.
Yep.
And he locks him away in the basement of Shawshank. But we don't know why he does it, other than he thinks to the kid that he is like the devil.
Some of the scenes in that ethereal world or whatever, we saw some prisoners being hunted by guys with dogs. Like it was an old time kind of thing. Like you would have seen out of Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
There was a teenager who was cutting her own wrists.
Yeah.
And then there was that girl with the knife. And every time, I don't know what it is about this show, but they love crows swarming. Every time they were in this ethereal world, there were crows swarming everywhere.
Yep.
Like, everywhere. The crow budget on this was insane.
I think it was all CGI.
Yeah.
So now in episode 10, the final episode of this season, it's been renewed for a second season, by the way, we get Molly explaining to Henry what she's learned about the kid regarding all the intersecting
and he basically tells her, you're fucking nuts.
And yeah, he doesn't, yeah. But then Henry and the kid are arrested as suspects in, like, they found Henry's DNA and all that stuff in the RV out in the woods, and that guy's dead. He got stabbed in the eye. We don't know who killed him yet or what happened.
Right. But his partner there, you know, the other weird
said
guy.
They were having a beef. They had a beef, and they found Henry's DNA. They, of course they did. They locked him in this padded room thing.
Right.
And then in jail, the kid basically tells Henry that, you know, like, hey, Bad follows him around because he's an anomaly in this reality.
Yeah.
And you need to take me back to the woods so we can get back to the, you know, I can go back to my reality.
Which would jive with the story of, you know, when Henry came over to the other world, bad things started following him around.
Exactly. Yes. And that's why, like, the school bus and all that stuff. Right.
Yep.
That happened when Molly was a kid. Happened when the kid first came into Henry's reality. And now, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it all kind of wraps around. And of course, and then the other thing that we're seeing is that Henry's son comes back and he's driven back to Castle Rock because of the noise.
Specifically to that spot in the woods.
Yes.
Where the police are investigating the body.
Exactly. So Henry and the kid get arrested.
Yep. Separately, not separately, together.
But then they get first. Henry's arrested, and then he tells Henry the police. He tells the police where the kid is at this Harmony Cemetery.
Because he told Molly, he said, "Tell him to come to Harmony Hill Cemetery. There's something I need to remind him of."
Yes.
And then when they arrest him and they take him away, there's a graveyard.
It just says Deaver Boy.
It says Deaver Boy born to heaven.
Yes.
Which so that's is Ruth's
in,
kid.
In this reality, Ruth did suffocate her kid with the clothes hanger. And that was the end of it.
Yep.
He didn't survive it. So he's trying to show him in this reality, you're dead.
Right.
You don't exist.
Yep.
That's why when they adopted Henry, the black boy, he became Henry Deaver, you know.
Right.
So that was interesting.
It was interesting.
Yeah.
They started calling that the other reality the over there.
So
not to be confused with the upside down.
That was the other thing, too. Going back, the new warden of Shawshank goes home and finds, like, a little character of herself.
Yeah, it's like a white queen. Look, there's, like, fragments on the floor, like somebody carved it out of soap or something.
Yeah, yeah. And freaks her out.
Yeah, because then...
Because, like, at prison, they carve shit out of soap.
Right.
So...
But then Ruth later says, where's the queen?
Yeah.
But it's not the same chess piece at all.
No, not even close.
No.
But they go back. She goes to see Molly and goes, is he... And she's like, is he here? I know you let him stay here when
because
he got
they're
out.
Basically shutting down Shawshank now.
Yes, and all the prisoners are being bussed out to other prisons.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, she's not. And then she's like, you know, Lacey was right. He is, you know,
he's
devil.
The devil.
Yeah, he is the devil. But it doesn't tell us why she feels that way. Because she, like, looks in a room and is like, but we don't see what's in the room.
Nope.
At all.
Nope.
And then she, of course, steps back out into the room and gets hit by a bus.
Yep. Creamed by one of those prison buses.
One of the prison buses, yeah. Like, murdered bad. Killed bad.
Yeah.
So, you have Henry and... So, after they arrest Henry at the cemetery... Sorry, the kid at the cemetery, they put him in the jail cell next to Henry. And then that's when the kid tells him all this stuff about how all these things happened because of me.
Wasn't it kind of weird that they were in separate cells and then they were in the same cell?
Well, no. When they brought the... Because they had to get the Shawshank prisoners off the bus because, you know, the crash. They needed to impound the bus. So they put Henry into the same cell as
that's
the kid
and then
put all the Shawshank prisoners in the other one.
Or tried to.
Right. No, they got them all in there. Who then start picking on the kid and Henry and catcalling him and oh, look, it's Nick Cage and all this other crap. And then you see the kid, like, uses powers to influence them, I guess, mentally.
Yeah, he kind of gets this, you know, that little look of his.
Right, yeah. And, like, so, like, the prisoners start fighting. One gets shanked. They open the cell to get the guy that got hurt out of there.
And the police actually say, show me the shank.
Yeah.
And, oh, okay, so they drop it. Like, oh, yeah. Okay, sorry, you asked. We're going to give it to you.
Then the guy comes out, grabs the guy. They start, you know, shooting the cops with the shotgun. Apparently,
oh, yeah. No
one wears bulletproof vests.
Yeah. And for somebody who just got shanked right in the gut, he's remarkably lithe and strong. Wrestles that shotgun right away from a trained security officer and blows his brains out.
You've met cops.
I have.
And then, like, they all escape and they go off into the regular, like, through the whole tussle. Somehow the keys manage to slide right into the kid's feet.
Yep.
So it's like, okay, he did something.
Yep.
And then you hear all kinds of commotion out in the precinct, the police station. And then finally the kid opens the cell and goes, come on, let's go. And Henry's like, no. Of course, the kid puts a gun on him. So they go. They walk out in the precinct. Everyone's dead. There's police officers dead. There's civilians dead. There's inmates dead. There's that guy's friend from the woods. He's like, oh, I'm coughing up blood. You know, there's... I thought you saw the woman sheriff slumped against the state trooper or whatever it was. I thought you saw her slumped against the
probably,
wall dead.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone's dead.
Yeah.
All these people are dead. And then you go out into the street and there's, you know, it's just kind of chaos. And they head on down to the woods.
More crows.
More crows. Lots of crows. Lots of crows.
Crows made Henry's car go off the road because they slammed into him earlier.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they head off into the woods, and then for whatever reason, Henry decides, wait, I'm going to fight you with this gun. Like, that didn't make a lot of sense, right?
No.
This timing of this?
No, hold on. What happened was they got out there, and Henry started hearing the noise more. It was, like, ringing in his ears.
Oh, and he starts seeing flashbacks.
Right,
yes.
He starts seeing flashbacks. Now, what didn't make sense in the flashbacks was we finally got to see what happened to the preacher. Basically, Henry ran ahead of him and got all the way up to the edge of the cliff, looked down, and you think, oh, he's going to jump. But instead, he starts doing these really big steps backwards so that he can undo his track. Basically, like, his anybody looking at the tracks is going to think, oh, this kid went up to the edge and jumped. So you can't see any of the tracks.
Yeah.
But there's nothing. Like, this is a big, wide open
field. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. How did he get out of there?
So he basically hid off to the side somewhere. The preacher comes up, looks, sees the tracks, goes, oh, looks over the edge of the cliff, and Henry appears out of nowhere and shoves him over the edge. This is kid Henry.
Now, here's the thing, though, because his dad just told him that he knew that his mom was having an affair with Alan Pangborn, and that he has no choice. He's got to kill his mother.
Yeah, he said she'll be gone soon. It'll just be us.
Yeah.
And Henry actually asks the kid that at one point. He goes, what would have happened in your reality if my mother hadn't packed a bag and left with Alan? And the kid goes, it would have killed her.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay. And then we get this flashback. So he's getting these flashbacks. The ringing is happening. And the kid goes, the kid says to him, can you hear it? Is it louder? And then a helicopter goes overhead. He looks up, and that's when Henry turns around and goes, oh, I'm going to make my break.
And grabs the gun. He wrestles the gun from him. And then the kid looks up at him, and his face gets all demonic.
Well, it was like I rewound it and watched it a couple times. His face was kind of gray, and it could have been the lighting, but it was all wrinkled like an old man kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like really wrinkled. And he was like, ah! Like he was in pain or something. And then he dropped his head and it came back up and it was him again.
Yeah. And now here's the thing. Okay.
I know.
So this is where it gets confusing. Okay?
And annoying.
Because Henry sees this and he decides, I'm not going to help you get back to your reality.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to 1 year later and it's Christmas 2019.
Henry's doing a voiceover.
Yeah. And he's talking about he's a lawyer in Castle Rock.
Yep.
Helping, living in his childhood home.
Property lawyer now. Because he's talking about justice and how justice can be weird depending on which side of the line you're on. And then he's like, and see, Mr. Smith, you know, her zinnias are on this side of the line and you dug your septic tank right here, so you're in trouble.
Yeah. But don't worry. Maine property law is not that hard. He made a point to say Maine, so we knew he was in Maine at that point. So then he goes home and his son's visiting him.
Yeah.
Molly.
They're playing chess on his mother's chessboard.
Yeah, they cut to Molly sitting in and there's a voiceover. And Molly and I guess her aunt or grandma, they look alike and they're sitting in the same position and everything.
They look like catatonic.
Yeah, so it makes you think something's wrong. And then Molly gets up and she's watching her own commercial being a real estate on TV, but she's in Florida now.
Mm-hmm.
Because Henry had said to her when he was in jail before all this happened, take Wendell, take him home to Boston, keep driving south, don't come back.
Right.
And that's what she did.
Yeah.
So she's living down there in Florida.
Yep.
And we find that Henry has imprisoned the kid in the now abandoned Shawshank.
Ruth is dead.
Yes, Ruth is dead.
She passed away in February. Right after, she shot Alan in October, so she didn't last very much longer.
Nope.
Oh, that was interesting. Hold on. We missed one thing. Molly, in this last episode, at one point is driving to meet with Henry.
Yes.
And she comes across Ruth standing on the bridge.
Yes.
And Ruth gives her this whole promo about how she says, we're always here. No matter what, time and time again, you're here, I'm here.
Yes.
This is how it always ends. She's talking about how, things pass back and forth constantly, but we always end up back here. And then Molly said something to her. Hold on. I wrote it down because it was good. Oh, yeah, okay. Molly tells her that one time she left Matthew, she already had a bag packed.
Yeah.
She's like, one time you actually left her. And Ruth turned around, looked at her, and went, it's the first time you've ever said that, and then gets down off the bridge.
Yeah.
So that goes back to the whole episode, The Queen, where Ruth was seeing things out of order, and you didn't know if it was her traveling through time or alternate realities or her Alzheimer's or what. So I thought that was really interesting because it kind of fed into the notion that there's a different reality, whereas the rest of this episode seems to undo all of it.
See, here's the thing that kind of bothers me. So the kid has that look on his face where he kind of looks like a demon.
Yeah.
Or maybe he's being sucked into his own reality for a moment, and so that's what you're supposed to be seeing, and then maybe you're not. But regardless, he has been in Henry's reality, or this reality we're watching, for 27 years and hasn't aged.
That's what I was wondering. because 27 years or so without aging, and so suddenly if time was catching up to him...
Would he age rapidly?
Right.
But I mean, he wouldn't look like that old of a man in 27 years. You know, he would be double his age probably.
Which would be like, 40, maybe 50.
50s probably. Yeah. Like, say even 60. But still, see, this is where it bothers me, because it's like, did this show end with an innocent guy who just was trying to get back to his own place, locked in a jail cell, and constant pitch black? That's the other thing. He's in constant darkness.
Yeah.
He was in constant darkness before.
Yeah.
And yet somehow...
And he asks Henry, he's like, how long are we going to do this? Henry's like, I don't know.
Yeah. Because he gives him like a burger and fries. What's this? It's a Christmas gift. It's Christmas? It was.
Well, no, tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yeah. So, and then he just leaves him there. Like, when he goes in to see him, it's pitch black. And there's like a thing that says drinking water and this and that. But then when he leaves him, he does leave him with a lantern on. How's he going to see the drinking water in the fucking pitch blackness?
Right.
So, I don't know. Like,
and then, of course, the last shot of him is we pan across to this cage. And the kid's just sitting in there with his head kind of tilted down. And then suddenly he, like, looks at the camera and gets this little Pennywise smile.
Oh, yeah, well, because that's Bill Skarsgård. He plays Pennywise.
Right.
And that's exactly what I thought immediately was, oh, it's Pennywise.
Right.
Yeah.
But the timeline, again, doesn't work out.
No, it doesn't work out. But it's just still the simple fact that he looks up and smiles.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm the evil one all the time, the whole time.
Right.
I really am the devil. I don't know. That's the thing.
I'm not a big fan of things that are open-ended like that, that leave you just wondering. Right. You know? Just give us something definitive.
Right.
And then, of course, you just found out right before the
podcast. I didn't watch the credits.
I mean, it was like 2 seconds into the credits. Like, I hit fast forward once, and suddenly it was right there.
Oh, yeah.
And it's basically just this crowded bar type thing. Jane Levy is sitting there at a laptop, and she's reading out loud the end of the story, the book, whatever, that she wrote based on what she did to kill that guy.
Yeah.
You know, put the axe in his head. She's like, you know, and I realized that I knew exactly where the axe belonged, in the professor's head. And this guy's like, don't you think it's a little derivative? And she's like, no, blah, blah, blah. And then she says something, and I wish I could remember the words of it, but she says something about, I'm going to be heading back out west soon because.
To do some research
because.
About her family's ex-killing history at the Overlook.
Yeah. Some
I didn't put two and two together.
Yeah. Someone once told me that, you know, it's always best to return to where a story started.
Yeah. Because, so, her name, her character in the show is Jackie Torrance. Jack Nicholson's character was Jack Torrance in The Shining. Obviously at the Overlook Hotel. Obviously he has issues with axes. So I wondered if we got backseat Jane Levy this whole season, because next season is going to be based on her out at the Overlook.
That'd be interesting.
Because what else is there to do in Castle Rock? I mean, I'm sure they could scare up some more stuff. But
that's exactly what they're going to do. Remember they said, anthology.
Right. So next season will be her probably out at the Overlook dealing with all that.
Quite possibly.
I don't know.
Or it could have just been like the newspaper clippings about Cujo and,
yes,
and Christine.
All that stuff,
and
yeah.
Stuff like that, yeah.
I just know that for me, my whole my favorite episode of this whole season was probably episode 8. That's when I think it was it 8 where they introduced the couple that bought the bed and breakfast.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that was because that was like an anthology episode of the whole thing.
That was a great episode. I really liked 9 if it was real. You know, I loved the idea.
Yes,
of the
I like it as well. But then this thought of me is like he's just telling a story.
Yep.
But who knows? Who knows? I'm sure somebody does. But yeah, that wrapped up that show.
Yep. So Castle Rock is now done until the next season comes on.
And we got only one more episode of The Sinner.
Yep. But like I told you before, I've got a couple of shows that just started this week, which is Forever on Amazon, which I'm going to check out. Fred Armisen and Maya Rudolph as a couple that's been married for 12 years. And then American Vandal Season 2. Serial pooper named the Turd Burglar. The reviews that I've read so far have been good. They said that it's less humor and more suspense. So I'm excited. Remember when I watched the first one, I said that it really could have been like a real true crime kind of thing. They really did it up that way. And it sounds like this one, they doubled down on that. So that I'm excited about. So I'll be watching those hopefully this next coming week. Because there's not a lot else on for now.
So I watched the first episode of American Story. Wait, American Horror Story Apocalypse.
Yes.
So I wasn't sure what to expect in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Or in this season, actually, even. It is weird.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's weird. So the beginning of the first episode...
You said that last season, though.
Yeah, I know. The first episode, we see a lot of characters from last episode, from, like, a lot of actors that were in the previous seasons, let's put it that way. So we see a lot of them at the beginning, and we have this girl named Coco St. Pierre Vanderbilt. She's getting her hair done.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. She's getting her hair done.
Okay.
And she, they're all there at the salon, and everyone's phones go off. And there's a message. It's like, you know, a National Weather Service type message.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like a warning system, and it says, ballistic missile inbound to Los Angeles. And, of course, people are like, oh, no, it can't be true. But the long and the short of it is that we learn that, Hong Kong, Russia, and England have all been leveled
wow.
by nuclear ballistic missiles. And there's one heading to L.A. And so Coco's dad calls her. And basically he's in Hong Kong or something like that. And he's like, look, there's been four tickets have been bought. And you are, we have four tickets. Your mother and your brother and I are here together. You're by yourself. You need to get to the Santa Monica airport to this plane. And they're going to take you someplace where you can be safe. And then, like, their phone cuts out because it's assumed that they've just all been wiped out from the nuclear explosion. So, of course, now the beginning of the episode is her getting to this place. Getting to the airport. So it's her and her assistant. And then she calls her husband boyfriend. And he doesn't make it. But he's like an actor that was in last season. He gets caught in traffic and then doesn't get there in time. And then her hairstylist goes to get his mother. His grandmother, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they show up at the plane. And so the four of them get on this plane. And the plane takes off. But they have no idea where they're going. And they open the cockpit door. And there's nobody in there. The plane's flying itself.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. And then there's a big nuclear explosion that rocks the plane. And then they look outside and you see the mushroom cloud come up as LA has just been leveled. And so it skips ahead a little bit. And basically, nuclear missiles have destroyed the world, creating a nuclear winter.
Okay.
And thanks to her family's fortune, Coco and her three friends, you know, they've managed to escape LA with her assistant Mallory and her hairdresser, Mr. Gallen, and his grandmother, Evie, who's played by Joan Crawford.
I already hate these people.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And then, meanwhile, we learn about this other group called the Cooperative, and they show up at these people's house, and apparently they've selected young adults to save from the apocalypse based on their genetic makeup, making them, like, perfect somehow.
Okay.
And, well, how did you get it? Oh, you took a – and it's basically like, oh, you had your blood drawn from here, and so we stole it from there or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So these people show up in military vehicles at this house to say, your kid's coming with us. You know, there's a missile coming to wipe this place out. Your kid's coming with us. We're not taking anybody else. You can't even take my brother? No, you're not an identical match. So they just rip this kid out of his family, and they take off, and they throw him in this deep underground bunker in a cell, and there's another girl that we meet there. And then now we fast forward that where Timothy and Emily, that's the two of them, they're headed to Outpost 3. And this is an underground base that's run by Miss Venable. And essentially, this is where it gets kind of real straight-up American Horror Story-ish, because it's this place that this group called the Cooperative is set up. And as they're walking in their gas masks, because, you know, nuclear fallout and everything, and they're full...
Which gas masks don't...
Well, no, sorry, they're full hazmat suits okay. is what I mean. Sorry, as they're walking in their full hazmat suits, you know, they pass these two kids that are on the ground on their knees, and they're in gray outfits, and they're saying, we're so sorry, it'll never happen again, we promise, blah, blah, blah. And then they just execute the kids in front of them. And then we cut to we're inside now, and we find out that Timothy and Emily, they're purples. Well, they're there to save the world in the future because of their DNA and blah, blah, blah. But then we also meet Coco and her hairstylist and assistant and grandmother. And then, you know, we have Kathy Bates is one of the people running this place. And Mr. Venable is another person running this place. And you know, they have very, very, very strict rules. No one's allowed to procreate without permission. No one's allowed to have sex without permission. No one's allowed to do everything. The Cooperative runs everything. And basically, there are people there that are, they call them grays. They're basically the servants. they're there to serve us, and they're happy to do so because they're alive. But if they break any rules, they basically kill them. And, you know, and then there's talk that, oh, three outposts have already been overrun. And it's just, I don't know. It's really kind of confusing, to be quite honest.
Now, like I said, when the last season came on,
yeah,
you felt similarly. You yeah. said that the first episode was really confusing, and then the second one was okay. And then it was like the third or fourth episode, I remember you were like, whoa.
It picked up and it got good. And I feel like this is what's going to happen again. Because basically, they're trying to cram a year and a half's worth of stuff into this one episode. Okay?
Right.
Which is, you know, the world's been destroyed. We have certain people that are saved. These are the people in charge. These are the people that bought their way in. Mm-hmm. These are the people that have been selected to be there because genetically they're perfect. And these are the people that are our servants because they're underlings.
Okay.
And they feed people these little gelatinous cubes because these cubes have all the protein and everything they need for a meal. Even though you may feel full, you won't die.
Is it called Soylent Green?
No, it's not. However, later on, Matt Boomer's character and Mr. Gallant, the hairstylist or whatever, they get accused of having, like, radiation on them somehow. Mm-hmm. So they get hauled off and scrubbed down. We later find out that it's just a ploy that these people, Ms. Venable and the other characters, are putting, you know, them through is to basically show their power. But Matt Boomer's character is killed in the first episode.
Wow.
So in the first episode, they kill a bunch of people.
Okay.
And then it goes 18 months later, and everybody's still alive. So no one else was killed in the preceding 18 months. However, now we're at the point where they're running low on food. Oh, and they imply that they cooked up the guy that they shot in the head and fed him to him.
Gross.
Yeah. It's implied, denied. That, oh, we didn't actually do that, you know. But regardless, so they implied that there was cannibalism, but then maybe there isn't, or maybe there is. Anyway, so it's 18. Oh, and that's the other thing. Like, they don't have enough food to last. They have enough food for 18 months. We have enough nutrition for 18 months. Da da da. Well, hello. If this is the cooperative was planning a nuclear fallout like this,
wouldn't
and they had these shelters, and people paid $100 million for a ticket to get into these shelters, and other people they're going to select to save the future. Now, you would think they would be a lot more well stocked and fortified.
Yeah.
So, yeah. They get a carrier pigeon arrives that says there's three of the outposts have been overrun.
Carrier pigeon?
Yeah. That's all they have.
You know,
messenger pigeon.
Because pigeons are fine to go through nuclear fallout.
Oh, no, no. They killed it after and disposed of it because it was, yeah. So then we're all sitting there and basically, you know, the people are starting to lose their mind because they're running out of food and they've been trapped in this place for 18 months and... But there's these strict rules, like even when they show up for cocktail hour and dinner, they have to be dressed up, so they're supplied with these. And, of course, the clothing's not normal clothing. It's out there clothing. People's hairstyles are out there a la the Hunger Games, you know, and shit like that. And then this guy named Michael Langdon shows up at the end of the episode, him in his horse-drawn carriage. Of course, they execute both the horses because, you know, they've been in this toxic fallout, have they, as, you know.
Of course.
Yeah. And he goes inside and he gets out. He's in full hazmat suit head to toe, but his is more reminiscent of like the Black Plague days with the big.
Oh, yep.
So he goes in
and
he's from the cooperative. And he basically says six more outposts have been overrun. So I'm here to decide who deserves to go to our main outpost, which is heavily fortified.
Not in Maine.
As in primary, yeah. And he's there to decide who gets to go. And Mr. Venable was like, oh, like, of the guests? Because obviously the staff will be allowed to go. And he's like, no. All of you can go. Some of you can go. Maybe none of you can go. But I'm the one that's going to determine this. And that's how the episode ends. And he presents an ID, and it says Michael Langdon. And so I looked it up.
He's Michael Langdon?
L-A-N-G-D-O-N, not Michael Landon.
Okay.
So Michael Langdon technically should only be 8 years old.
Oh,
but he's an adult.
Okay.
Remember back in the first season, Murder House,
mm-hmm.
before they called it Murder House, they used to call it American Omega. In the first season of Murder House, remember the ghost Tate?
Yes.
And he had sex with Vivian Harmon in the rubber suit, and she thought it was her husband.
Mm-hmm.
She got pregnant and had a kid.
Yep.
This is her kid.
Oh.
Except he's a full-grown adult. But it's only been 8 years since Murder House. So I don't know. We'll see where it goes. It'll be I guess, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound like...
I'm not sold 100%.
Okay. But again, you weren't...
Again, I wasn't last year. And then I was.
One of your doors just farted.
No, that's Addison. Oh. Addison, instead of just walking downstairs like a normal person and going to the bathroom, she feels like she has to sneak down and try and be real quiet. Which, you know, when anyone tries to be quiet, unless they're a ninja, they're loud as shit.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know. I'm obviously going to watch the second episode.
Right.
But yeah, I'm kind of feeling like I did last year. Where at first, it's like, all right, hopefully it makes sense at some point.
I watched the first episode of Kidding, as I mentioned.
Yes, how was that?
It's interesting. It's darker than I expected.
Well, I don't know. I expect it to be pretty damn dark.
It's a half an hour, which I thought it was going to be longer. It opens up with the Conan O'Brien show, and he's a guest on there. And he's introduced as, you know, oh, you know him. He's raised your children. He's raised your parents. He's raised your grandparents. For 30 years, he's been on TV, blah, blah, blah. Mr. Pickles. And Danny Trejo is the other guest out there. And he's like, oh, Mr. Pickles, Mr. Pickles. Like, yeah, they're all excited.
That's
and then,
awesome.
Like he gets out there and he's talking and to Conan. Conan's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, he doesn't understand what he's talking about. And before that, the publicist, like, talks to Conan. She's like, yeah, it's been... Today's the one-year anniversary, and you're not allowed to talk about it. He's like, okay, whatever. So he goes out there, and he's like, I've got a little song that I'd like to play for my wife, if that's okay. And Conan's like, what? I guess. And he opens up this guitar case, and there's this guitar-type thing, but it has, like, puppet body on it, and it has, like, hands on the – so he, like, slides his hands in so that he's controlling the puppet's hands, and – Conan's like, what the hell am I looking at? And Danny Trejo's like, that's Ukulele. What are you talking about? Everyone knows Ukulele. So that's just great, you know. Big old badass Danny Trejo. But it, essentially, there was a massive car accident. You get to see it in the first episode.
Yeah.
Judy Greer is his wife. They're not together right now. He had twin boys. And she was driving them along in a van, blah, 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 and there was a short circuit in a traffic light, so it went green in all directions. Complete accident, you know? And this delivery truck just creamed them. I mean, it was a brutal hit. And one of his sons died. And the other one's now a butt plug. Like, he's just an asshole kid, you know? There are kids picking on him, and Jim Carrey comes over, and he's like, hey. Why don't we? He's very, very Mr. Rogers, like everything, even in real life, because everyone recognizes him.
Right.
You know? And he's like, you know, why don't we try doing this stuff instead? And the kid's like, you know, he's like, Dad, you're fucking embarrassing and blah, blah, blah. And he's, I wish you wouldn't swear. And he goes, yeah, well, whatever. And so he's a real asshole of a kid. So he's dealing with that. The kid seems to be dealing with the fact that, you know, his dad is Mr. Rogers, essentially.
Yeah, that might be difficult to deal with.
Yeah, yeah. There's a realtor who's showing a house in the neighborhood, like one house down from them, to this couple. And she's like, oh, see, I told you this is a good neighborhood. You know, Mr. Pickles is here. And they're like, oh, Mr. Pickles. And his kid starts saying things about, like, you know, hey, did they tell you that somebody was murdered and raped there and blah, 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 and, like, rattling off all the stuff and... He's like, I wish you wouldn't talk like that. You know, he doesn't even get mad at his kid. He's just like, I wish you wouldn't do that. So,
how old is his kid?
I'd say 10, 11.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's just a real asshole.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. He, the kid goes out to a graveyard at one point to visit his brother, take a little magician's wand because, you know, that was his brother's favorite thing. And it's the one-year anniversary, so he goes out there and he finds these three.
That's what the anniversary is of
yes.
the crash.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So he finds these kids – teenage kids that are sitting on his brother's grave smoking weed. And he's like, hey, could you not do that here? You know, that's my brother's grave. And they're like, yeah, well, we'll move on when we feel like it, blah, blah, blah. So he basically then starts smoking with them because, you know, that's what they do. But then throughout the episode, he goes about finding a giant beehive, knocking it down, putting it in a trash bag, and then taking it over there and leaving it at his brother's grave so that the next time they come around, they get stung by bees. Not really how beehives work, you know?
No, yeah. It seems not.
No, so, but yeah, so the next time they come around, they're like, oh, we're getting stung. Oh, God, we got to run away. But he runs away with them because there's a girl there and she's kind of cute. Yeah, it's odd. Okay. I'm going to keep watching it.
Okay.
Can't give it a hard sell yet, though. Kind of like you with American Horror Story.
Yeah. What else you watch?
For shows, just Iron Fist.
I watched the first two episodes.
Yep. So we should probably dig deeper into it when you've got it all under your belt.
So you want to finish it? I want me to finish it first, and we'll talk about it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just initially, scratching the surface, are you liking it?
I'm enjoying this very much. Yes. First episodes are really good. I really like them a lot.
I love Colleen, and I'm glad that she's in this.
Me too. I found it very interesting that at the beginning, Danny waits for four people to be killed before stepping in to stop the armored car hijacking.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's still figuring that part out, I guess.
Yeah. But I'm liking the introduction of Alice Eve's character so far.
Yeah, that's an interesting character.
Yeah, so far. But anyway, so yeah, we'll wait till I finish it. I imagine I'll probably finish it pretty soon.
I mean, you're not Jeremy, so you're not going to have it finished.
Oh, I'm not
going to have a 10-hour show and an 8-hour shift.
No. I can't pull that off. But
yeah, it's only 10 episodes, so I mean, you've got 8 to go.
Yeah.
I may have to go back and brush up on some of it because I watched this like a week and a half ago. Basically, the day it came out, I just like burned through the whole thing.
Okay. Yeah. It came out last Friday.
Yeah. So a week ago.
A week and a day ago. Yeah. I watched a couple more episodes of Paradise PD. I'm just saying, I think it's funny.
I put it on in the background now when I'm playing a game sometimes.
Yeah.
Just so that I have it going. There's some good stuff in there.
Also, the wife and I finished the first season, which is only 8 episodes, apparently. Or maybe it'll be 7, I don't know. Of Anne with an E on Netflix, which I guess was apropos that we were watching it while we were on Prince Edward Island.
Because it takes place
there? In Cavendish, where it's based.
Oh, okay.
So that was kind of funny.
Was it filmed there as well?
I think in the Megan Follows series from the mid-80s, I think they did film some of that there. I don't know if this one was, though. So, I will say this though. So, my wife and I we went on vacation 2 nights in Nova Scotia, 2 nights Prince Edward Island. And the reason why this all started
sounds like something you get off like Wheel of Fortune, you know?
Yeah.
2 nights in Nova Scotia, 2 nights in Prince Edward Island.
We drove 1,604 miles round trip. For wherever we went, but we did some cool things along the way. But one of the main reasons why we went to begin with is we love the show Oak Island.
There's like 5 of them. There's Curse of Oak Island. There's Oak Island Digging Deeper.
Oh, no. Just
there's the after show, Talking Oak Island.
I don't think there's a Talking Oak Island or an after show.
Oh, come on now.
No, there
is. You know they're coming.
No. There's just the Curse of Oak Island.
And Digging Deeper.
So the Curse of Oak Island, we love that show.
Okay.
And so last January, we bought tickets so we could go and tour the island.
I tried to get into it.
Oh, that's fine. It's not for everyone.
They don't find shit.
They find enough to keep you watching.
Not me.
Okay, well, but that's what I said. It's not for everyone. So we, like I said, we really like the show a lot. We bought the tickets. We chose a Saturday day because Charles Barkhouse, who's on the show.
Okay.
I guess you can call him a cast member. I don't know. He's a local historian and knows all about it, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so he was doing tours there on the island for the group before the TV show happened, because this is something that always people have been interested in going to see. It's just that they haven't had the ability until the last like 6 years or whatever. Lagina's really been doing all the work they've been doing on the island trying to find it. So, but we picked that day so we could at least meet Charles Barkhouse, one of the guys we watch on the TV.
I really, every time you say that, I want you to finish it. Charles Barkley.
It's Charles Barkhouse.
That sounds like Charles Barkley's dog.
Or Charles Barkley's dog sleeps in the Charles Barkhouse.
Right, exactly.
So it was just really cool. You know, we get down there, and then there's the causeway. It's close to the public unless you're invited. If you have a tour ticket, you're invited.
You're pointing at yourself, so I'm assuming you have a tour ticket.
We have tour tickets, okay. Yes, we did. So it's just kind of cool, like, all right, I'm seeing stuff I see on TV. You know, we drive across the causeway. That's pretty awesome. You know, we get parked. We see the war room where they have all their meetings. There's the interpreter.
They call it the war room?
Yeah, they call it the war room.
Why?
I don't know. That's their guys. They like to play war. I don't know. There's the interpretive center, which is like their museum. Where you go in, you can see a lot of things they found. This past season, they found this old lead cross, and they found this, like, this brooch with this emerald in it and everything, and Gary Drayton found it. He's the guy that does all the detecting, metal detecting. And so they had those go under glass case in the interpretive center. It's like, this is awesome because we're getting to see these things in person.
Right.
So then, you know, I feel like there was like 30 people on our tour. I can't remember now, but we start the tour and from the Causeway parking area where the interpretive center is to the money pit is 3/4 of a mile. So you walk the whole thing, you walk the whole thing back.
That was a great movie.
The Money Pit?
Mm-hmm.
So we head in and we get to see, you know, a lot of the things that you see on the show. We get to see the bottom stone of Nolan's Cross. That's by the roadway. We get to see that, you know. We get to see Samuel Ball's land, and he explains all that to us, you know, where they found
Balls.
Yeah. We get to see the beach, the swamp, the Money Pit, 10X, Smith's Cove. I mean, we got to see all the things that you see on the TV show and everything. But the coolest thing is we got to see what they've been working on.
Because, of course, there's going to be another season.
They're filming all summer. So we got to see what they've done in the Money Pit, how it looks different. Now, they asked us specifically not to take any pictures of the Money Pit. They asked us not to take pictures of Smith's Cove. I took one. But I'm not putting them on the internet.
Okay.
I just want them for me. But once the show comes out, it won't matter that I took them. And I've seen pictures on the internet people have already taken and posted, like, you know, douches. At least I'm not posting mine.
Right.
So anyways, we got to see. The Money Pit didn't look a whole lot different. But we got to see what the changes were. And then seeing 10X was really cool. And it's way bigger than I thought it was. The pit, the tunnel that leads down in the ground and everything, you know. And then, however, we got to hear a lot of cool stories that we haven't heard on the TV show. A lot of cool things about, like, some of the things that Dan Blankenship did and everything like that. And it was cool. We got to hear some stuff we'd already heard before. We got to hear a lot of things we'd never heard before. So that was super cool. The tour is supposed to be 2 hours. And by the time we got out there and got back, it was 3. And he told a lot of great stories and told us a lot of different things. And then we get down to Smith's Cove, which was the last thing we kind of saw. And he walks down and he turns around because we can only go down so far. We can go all the way down in the cove because they are working on Smith's Cove. That's all I'll say.
Okay.
And he turns around and just says, well, as you can see behind me, stuff's happening. No, I will not answer any questions. Just let's save it for the show. Let's save the aha moment for everybody when they see it on TV, okay? That was his biggest thing. But, yeah, it's cool. It was really cool to see things like that. So that way when we watch the show – when it comes back on this winter, or, you know, we'll get to, all right, now let's see them explain the things that we saw.
Right.
So, yeah. So I'm actually really glad we went on our tour late in the season instead of early in the season because – and then a really, really cool thing. When we got back out by the Interpretive Center, everyone kind of came out at their own pace walking out. And by the time we got there, we were kind of near the end of the line because you were pushing the stroller with Wesley in it. And Gary Drayton and Rick Lagina were there. Just hanging out, talking to people. And it specifically says, do not expect to meet cast members when you're on the tour and on the website and even in the Interpretive Center because, you know, they only do the tours on Saturday and Sunday. And Saturday and Sunday, they don't film the show.
Mm-hmm.
They only film Monday through Friday. And so don't expect to see them there. And so it was really cool that we got to meet, you know, Rick and Gary and that we got our picture with them and everything. And they're both wicked nice guys. And Rick was just like, you know, took his time with everybody and was very appreciative and wanted to know, like, well, do you believe that there's something here? Why do you believe? Why do you not believe? I mean, it was really, really cool. I mean, it was an awesome experience and well worth it and everything. So that was fun to a TV show that we really enjoy watching a lot to actually go see all that stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. So did you watch any movies?
I did. Did you?
I didn't watch any.
No. You didn't watch any movies?
Yeah, no.
That's so unlike you.
I didn't watch. Well, I try.
I got 4 of them that I actually want to talk about. What was that? What the hell is wrong with you?
No.
I just said I got four. And he literally, like, exhaled and rolled his eyes. He's like,
I didn't roll my eyes. I just went, wow. Like, you said that you want to talk about. So I'm like, how many more did you watch that you don't want to talk about?
I'm not feeling the love here, Mike.
I'm sorry.
I'm not feeling the love.
Maybe I'm jealous. I don't have time to watch movies.
Maybe.
There's a bunch of movies that are on Netflix I do want to watch. I just haven't had a chance to watch them.
Well, I'm gonna report on them in decreasing order. Like, I'll save my top for last.
Okay.
So I watched Nerve. which I didn't think I'd watch. I never wanted to watch it in the theaters. This is the one that has Emma Roberts and the less famous, the one who was Cole in the last season of Scrubs.
Oh, the Franco.
Yes, the less famous Franco. And basically, it's a social media game where you're either a watcher or a player, and it's like Truth or Dare. Okay, kinda.
I watched that.
Yeah,
I watched that.
I thought it was pretty good.
I thought it was good. Yeah,
yeah, it was suspenseful. It was a little, you know, vapid at points, but I liked it for the most part. I thought it was good. There's a new original movie that just broke on Netflix called Sierra Burgess is a Loser. So Sierra Burgess is played by the girl who played Barb in Strange Things.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
And Sierra Burgess is a loser. Sierra Burgess is kind of a play on Cyrano de Bergerac, because this is essentially a modern teenage version of Cyrano de Bergerac.
Okay.
She's a loser, and the popular girl from school, the most popular clicky, you know, captain of cheerleaders, bitch face. Like, this guy comes up to her and says, "Hey, can I get your phone number?" She goes, "Sure." And she gives her Sierra's phone number. So he starts texting Sierra, thinking that it's her. Sierra's like, "Oh, cool, a guy's texting me," and starts texting back and forth with him. And they kind of click through text. But then she finds out, wait, he thinks that this is the captain of the cheerleaders. And it's a pretty good movie. It's another teenage romance kind of thing, but it's got that interesting twist where, you know, it's Cyrano de Bergerac, except for instead of a guy down in the, you know, bushes saying, "Hey, tell her this," it's two girls with text messaging, or then, you know, Skype
sense.
Kind of thing.
Text messaging. Yeah, that makes sense.
And then at one point they Skype where, like, the cheerleader's sitting here. Okay, the camera's facing her so he can see her, but she's talking and Sierra is sitting behind the camera talking. And like at one point he goes, "Yeah, I think we have a bad internet connection because the audio is not really syncing up with your lips," because the cheerleader is just sitting there going, "Nah, nah, nah, nah," and Sierra is actually saying the words. So, no, it was a pretty good, I'd recommend giving it a watch.
Reminds me of Roxanne.
Yes, yes, which was also a Cyrano de Bergerac. I watched The Greatest Showman.
Oh, how's that?
It felt short.
It's like 2 hours long, isn't it?
Yeah, but like this is supposed to be the story of how P.T. Barnum came up with...
Yeah, in musical form with Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, and it felt like rapid. Huh. Like it just, it seemed to jump through things really quickly. I expected it to be a bit slower. I expected, like, I don't know, but it seemed to go by very quickly. And that was a little disappointing, but overall, the musical numbers were great. The story was really good. A lot of people were really prejudiced back then. Rachel Nichols was in there. I didn't realize she was in there. But she plays like a famous singer who was very good at singing. So it was good. I recommend it. But again, it wasn't like, yeah. And then the best movie that I watched this week, and holy crap, it's the best movie I've watched in a while, was Searching.
Yes, I had mentioned today I saw that it was in Augusta again, and you'd say you'd already seen it.
Yeah, last weekend, of course, you know, for those who listen to the podcast, the weekend before that was a long weekend. I was excited. I was going to go watch Searching, first time going to the movies by myself, you know, got all excited and found out that the closest theater that was playing it was like 50 miles away.
Yeah.
And again, this is Central Maine. 50 miles is not a big thing. When you go on the dating site, you actually say like 50 miles so that you can hit Portland, which otherwise you'll never meet anybody. But I'm not going to drive 50 miles just to watch a movie that might be good but might not.
Right.
This movie was friggin' great.
Really?
This movie was so well done. Like, it starts off, the whole opening credits and everything is just a Windows XP computer screen. And you get to watch somebody, like, you get to watch an icon be made for a new folder, and then it's like first days of school. And then you see pictures and videos dropped in there, and they're just telling this story, essentially, within the first 5 minutes of this family who had a daughter, they love their daughter, and mom gets cancer. And then mom beats cancer. And then mom gets cancer again, and mom doesn't make it. And that's basically the intro to the movie.
Okay.
And the rest of the movie is told from technology. It's like a found footage kind of thing. It's either from him sitting in front of the computer like this, so you're seeing what he, you know, you're seeing from the backside of the computer screen, like you're the camera.
You see, you're the webcam point of view.
Yep. There's a lot of FaceTime videoing.
Yeah.
So you see, like, two phone screens on the screen, or you'll see, like, a phone screen with the little
head, yeah.
Yep. There's a few things in it that are news reports, so you get to see news reports not on the computer screen, but and there's a few of them that are like security camera kind of things. I'm not going to ruin this. I'm going to say if you like a good suspenseful movie, if you want to really question what you're doing with social media on the internet, if you want a great whodunit, go watch this movie. Like, go watch it. Don't wait for it to come out on video.
Huh, wow.
Check this movie out.
That's a hard push.
Check this movie out. I was impressed. I came out of this thinking, this was time well spent. This was money well spent. I really friggin' enjoyed this movie.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was very happy that it turned out well.
Nice.
You know what I didn't watch? Mandy. You know that new one with Nicolas Cage being Nicolas Cage and the chainsaw fight with the chainsaw that's like 8 feet long? And
oh, yeah.
Apparently that is getting great reviews.
Really?
It's at like 96% on Rotten Tomatoes last time.
Oh, wow.
And they're saying that it's phenomenal and that it's Nicolas Cage at his best. And I got to see this movie.
Hmm.
It's not around here. But
it's
I gotta
not playing around here probably.
No, no. I got to see this movie.
Wow. Makes you want to watch Searching.
Yes.
Yeah.
Seriously. Go watch Searching. I'm giving it a hard push. It kept me right on the edge of my seat. And, again, I'm not going to ruin anything more. The intro is all I'll tell you about, but
okay.
Holy God, this was well done.
So what did you watch for trailers? You got some trailers to talk about?
Did you watch the new Halloween trailer? They actually had a Halloween trailer?
No.
Okay.
I'm avoiding it.
Okay.
I watched the first one.
Yep.
And then they've released a second one and then technically a third international one.
I never watched the international
one. I'm not watching anymore.
Okay.
Because I know I'm going to see this movie.
I really liked it.
The trailer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely going to watch the movie.
Yeah. Pride's Corner Drive-In has said that they're going to have it at the drive-in in October.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually off that Sunday night. So I'm hoping to be able to do that and
right.
go to the drive-in and see it. That's
yep.
Ideally, I would like to go to the drive-in and see
right.
it.
Right. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Critic reviews are already good.
Yeah,
they're already saying that it really did a good job of undoing all the bastardization.
Well, okay, I thought it was going to be a direct sequel to Part 2. It's not. It's a direct sequel to Part 1.
Yeah.
So they're ignoring everything after Part 1, including the storyline that Laurie and Michael are brother and sister.
Right.
That's not the case anymore.
Exactly. And they're, if I'm not mistaken, they're even going back to calling him The Shape.
Probably, yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Love that.
I still like the fact that they have Nick Castle playing The Shape.
Yes.
For parts of the
movie. I was going to say, yes. Yeah. Not all.
There was a cool picture. Like
he actually has a cameo as well, I heard.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
No, I'm looking forward to it. I'm really, really looking. That's one of my favorite horror movies.
Yes.
The original Halloween.
Yep. And for a good reason.
Though. Yeah, like that and Evil Dead.
Yep.
I love those two movies. And to be honest, as far as sequels are concerned, not all the Halloween sequels are awesome. Halloween 3, I like. Season of the Witch, I think it's a fun movie, but...
But it has nothing to do with Halloween.
Exactly. But a lot of people hate it because of the fact it's called Halloween 3, and they should just call it, retitle the movie Season of the Witch,
right.
And blah, blah, blah. The Rob Zombie Halloween remake...
First one.
The first one was excellent.
Yep.
The theatrical version.
Yep.
Not the unrated version where Michael escapes because two guards are raping a girl in his room.
Right.
That's not necessary.
No, Rob Zombie, that is not necessary.
Exactly. But the first one, the theatrical version, that movie's excellent. I watch that every year. I love it. His sequel is fucking dog shit.
Yep.
Likewise.
God, I remember being so disappointed after that.
Well, and it was amazing because, like, when I went and saw the first Halloween, I went and saw, you know, Rob Zombie's first Halloween, I was like, I don't know. Hope he doesn't ruin it. And then we watched him, like, this was fucking amazing.
Yes.
And you agreed. Then we went and saw the sequel, very excited.
Brad Petrie, because he
yes.
was all
yep.
into Halloween as well.
Went and saw the sequel because we were very excited based on how good the first one was. And then it was like, what is this garbage? It started out okay, and then it just went downhill.
He put his wife in it.
Yeah.
That's part of the problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember a horse.
Well, no, that was the thing. His wife was in the first one, but she was great in the first one.
Oh, was she?
She's Michael's mother.
Oh, yeah.
She was great in the first one. It's the second one, her spirit with this big horse and all this weird, like, artsy shit. And it was just like, this is what I thought he was going to do the first one. But anyways, likewise, you know, Halloween, Gar Carpenter's Halloween and Rob Zombie's Halloween. I love both of those movies.
Yep.
Likewise, Sam Raimi's Evil Dead and then, like, whatever, Fed Alvarez, whatever the Feds, whatever his name is. You know, the guy that did the Evil Dead. Jane Levy, love that movie. That's a fantastic movie. So that's kind of ironic.
Yeah.
The correlation I was trying to make. The first Nightmare on Elm Street, I enjoy a lot.
Mm.
And then the Nightmare on Elm Street with, help me out.
I just want to say Rorschach. Robert Englund, but it's not. Yeah.
Rorschach.
Yeah.
Whoever. Yeah.
I can't think
of, you know what I'm talking about.
Hey, yeah.
I like that movie. Yep. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. So
no, I liked it as well.
I don't know, but I'm very excited about this Halloween movie. Jamie Lee Curtis being back, John Carpenter being back involved in it. You know, just
yep.
40 years later, literally, this is coming out 40 years after the first one. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. Well,
just as crazy as friggin' this month, Sylvester Stallone starts filming Rambo 5. I enjoyed the last Rambo movie, actually.
I remember you saying that you did.
I was surprised how much I enjoyed that movie. Yeah. They told a great story. There's a lot of killing in it.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that Rambo is already established as a badass, so they don't have to establish him. Because you know they do that in movies when you have a new badass character coming. Usually you get someone reading a dossier of how badass they are.
Right, right.
You know? And it's just like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Or they have to take the time to show you. The only movie I can think of where they establish someone's badassness with just two simple scenes. One, it was John Wick.
Mm.
And it's the scene where, like, the guys tried to kill him in his home. And the police show up. And he opens the door and the cop goes, hey, John, how's it going? Pretty good. And he just kind of looks by him and sees the dead body and he goes, thought you were retired. I am, just working some things out. All right, John, we'll see you later.
Yeah.
You know, he just leaves. Like, there's that. It's like, okay, that was cool. That's establishing it. And then secondly, when the big boss calls up Luigi Mario there and says, like, did you hit my son? Yeah, I did. And kick him out of your place? Yeah, I did. Why? Because he stole John Wick's car and killed his dog. And he just goes, oh.
Yeah.
That's it. That established how badass John Wick was.
Of course,
then we get the whole killed them with a pencil story.
Yes.
But I'm just saying. So, like, I'm looking. I just saw Sylvester Stallone pop something on his Instagram and him gym in the gym working out, getting ready for Rambo 5 because he starts filming it this month.
Damn.
Guy's 73 years old.
That's crazy.
And he looks in great shape. I don't care if he's roided up or not. 73, he looks in great shape. Anyways, sorry.
That's Engine.
Okay. What else did you watch your trailers?
Mortal Engines. I saw the extended trailer for this. This is the one where they've got the cities on the back of vehicles.
Yeah.
It looks good.
Yeah,
The extended preview really looks good.
Okay.
Yeah, basically, girl tries to assassinate the leader of London because he did something to her mother, and his son jumps in the way, and he's like, you know, stop, you can't kill my dad. So the guy chases her down in the bowels of the beast, and you know she's like, you did this and you did this, and it's time everybody knew. And she jumps out and slides down a little garbage chute or whatever. The guy looks at his son, he's like, I'm sorry you heard all that, and then stabs him and throws him out. It looks like it's going to be a good movie. I'm excited to see that one.
So he kills his son or just stabs him?
Yeah, because then they team up, of course. Yeah,
I knew it.
Widows, this is the one that has all the stars in it. Viola Davis is the wife of Liam Neeson. He was a professional, like, bank robber type person, and him and his team got killed. And the guys that they worked for came to her and said, well, your husband's debt is now your debt, so you owe us. So now she has to get together the widows of all these men and say, we need to come up with this money or we're fucked, and let's take these guys out in the process. It's got a huge cast.
Yeah, it does. Viola Davis, Michelle Rodriguez, Colin Farrell, Jackie Weaver, Carrie Coon, Robert Duvall, Liam Neeson's.
Yeah, it looks good. It looks like a good heist revenge movie. Where
better than Ocean's 8?
I don't know.
It's a woman's heist movie that's, you know.
Right. Saw the preview, the short teaser trailer for She-Ra and the Princesses of Power.
What the hell is that?
It's the new Netflix animated series that's coming out soon.
Oh, I think I'm okay. I remember. Maybe that's why we have that Power of Grayskull.
It looks very cartoony. I'm not sure that I'm sold on it yet, but it's been getting really great reviews.
And the princesses?
Princesses of Power. So I'm not sure where they're going with that.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at this dual image here.
Yeah.
Of the original She-Ra and the new one.
Yep.
I get what you mean by it looks really cartoonish.
And in the trailer, she basically, I don't know if this is going to mean anything to you, but basically when she grabs the sword and you hear this voiceover of somebody talking to her about, you know, justice and honor and stuff, it transforms her like Sailor Moon kind of style.
Yeah, that's kind of the animation it looks like to me.
But again, I'm going to give it a try because I loved the new Voltron. I really loved the new Voltron. So I'm hoping that this is going to be good as well.
John, no, this won't be.
Nope, I'm going to check it out. I saw a preview tonight for Homecoming. It's a new Amazon original series. It's by the creator of Mr. Robot, Sam Esmail.
Ooh.
Yeah. And it's got Julia Roberts, who works at a treatment center called Homecoming. And like anything else that Sam Esmail does, it's impossible to watch the trailer and know what the hell is going on.
Yeah.
But it looks suspenseful, and it looks creepy, and it looks great. So I'm looking forward to that. I think you're going to end up going back on the Amazon bandwagon eventually because all these great new shows are coming out.
Yeah, feels like it. Well, I've already decided I'm buying a new TV.
Yep, yep.
My overtime riches.
Yep.
I've decided on getting a Roku TV.
Okay. Yeah.
Because that's what we use primarily in my house.
Right. You're a Roku guy.
Yeah. And I'm going to get a sound bar.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to get a Roku TV because, again, that's probably what we use. And you can... Like, as it is, we turn the TV on and then pick up the Roku remote, and that's what my kids use.
Right.
I'm the only one that really flips through the antenna channels.
Right.
And Kate, when she wants to watch the news. But at the top row on the banner of the Roku TV bar channels, you put an antenna, and there you go. So.
Cool.
Yeah. Anyways, I've also decided I'm going to buy a Fire TV stick.
Oh, yeah?
Amazon Fire Stick.
Yep.
Because New Japan Pro Wrestling doesn't have Roku channel, but it does through the Fire Stick. So on, like... When they're $20 on Black Friday or whatever, you know, Monday is Cyber Monday.
Yep.
I'm going to buy one then.
Good.
So I can watch, New Japan Pro Wrestling through my TV instead of plugging my laptop into it.
And the next thing you know, you're going to have Amazon Prime again.
Probably. I'll get a year of Amazon Prime coming up here, yeah.
Three more trailers.
Okay.
Two of which I know you've seen because I sent them to you. One of them was The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
What'd you think of that?
It seems dark.
Did it make you want to watch it still?
No.
Yeah, that was my problem.
Like, I'm still going to watch it, but watching that trailer made me go, no.
Yeah.
This is like a satanic cult, and it's like they went American Horror Story-ish on it.
Yeah, it didn't... It
was creepy.
The drive I had to want to watch it dissipated.
Yes.
I'm still going to check it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. I'm glad it had the same effect on you.
Yep. And then the one that I sent you tonight, Anna and the Apocalypse.
Okay, dude, it's a fucking Christmas musical about zombies.
and I know you're kind of zombied out.
No. I remember years ago, you sent me a pie graph chart or a flow chart, whatever it is, and it has one circle. It says people who like musicals. One circle, people who like horror movies, and they intersect. And the small section of the intersected said serial killer.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's you. You're the intersection. Because I love musicals and I love horror movies.
This is going to be fucking great.
Other than Evil Dead, the musical.
Right.
But yeah, this looks phenomenal.
Anna and the Apocalypse is a zombie Christmas musical.
Yeah.
It's being called Shaun of the Dead meets La La Land. And... I cannot wait.
Yeah.
Watching that trailer and seeing the over-the-top, like, the two bowling balls, the guy holding one in each hand and smashing
the worst part of that trailer, though, was the crappy voiceover work.
Oh, yeah.
That was horrendous. Terrible.
Yes.
But the trailer, so, yeah, I can't wait for this movie. That
it's
looks great.
It's going to be great. That's definite theater.
Yes.
Now, this last one, I couldn't find a release date on. It's a documentary.
Yep.
And it's called Fuck You All, The Uwe Boll Story.
Okay, yeah.
You know who Uwe Boll is?
Yeah, he's done a lot of movies.
House of the Dead,
yep.
The Blood Rain movies.
Yep.
He's considered the most hated director in all of Hollywood.
Yeah.
Everyone hates working with him. Everyone hates his work. He has never produced a movie that people have gone, oh, that's good. They always go, what is this garbage? And he's essentially a human piece of shit. So this...
Now, I haven't heard that his character is that horrible.
Oh, yeah. Watch the trailer. And by the way, I tried looking it up on IMDb with Fuck You All, and there was no listing. But it's F...
Star, yeah. I got it right here.
Yeah. They didn't have a release date on it. They said that it's completed. But, yeah, it looks like...
Oh, my God. This is who they've talked credited as cast. Keith David, Clint Howard, Uwe Ball, Brendan Fletcher, Lindsay Hollister, Guinevere Turner, Sean Williams. A lot of B people.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that he was, like, that people thought he was such a piece of shit or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, watch the trailer. You're going to go, holy crap. But, yeah. So that's going to be interesting. Huh. I'll check that out when it's on Netflix or something.
Well, I'm actually really intrigued. Like, I really do want to see this because I have liked some of his movies.
Really?
Yes.
Like what?
I'm trying to think of now which one because I remember watching and going like, who made this? Oh, well, okay. That actually surprises me.
Give me probably a wasn't Blubberella. No. I know it wasn't House of the Dead because I know
that. No, that movie was garbage.
He's famous for doing video game movies. Some of those that you'll see on there, like Far Cry or A Dungeon Siege Story, those were all based on video games, and people hated it because he was single-handedly driving video game movies into the joke pile.
Oh, and the movie's called Max Schmeling.
Okay.
Yeah, Max Schmeling. It's a biopic movie about the famous boxer who fought Joe Louis.
Oh, okay.
It's one of the like best 10 fights of all time.
So he couldn't really be creative with that. He had to base it on...
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess. But yeah, that movie, I remember watching that and being like, this is actually really good. So. Huh. No, I didn't realize that people felt that way. But yeah, a lot of the movies he makes are god-awful terrible.
Yes.
Blood Rain is terrible.
Oh, this is kind of a trailer. You'll be happy to hear about this. They've started running promos on TBS for the next season of The Guest Book.
Oh, they have?
Yes.
Nice.
And it looks like it's going to be a beach house.
Okay.
The only person that I saw that was consistent from the first one was Tickles the Prostitute. and she's really complaining about eating a sausage sandwich out on the beach.
Nice.
But I saw, like, Crabman from My Name is Earl.
Nice.
They had some other stars.
Was there a release date?
No, they just said coming soon.
Okay. That's still cool, though. I'm glad to hear it. So, I got some information, I guess.
Yeah.
It was kind of a trailer, but not really.
Okay.
Into the Dark.
That sounds familiar.
It's the movies, like the movies based on, I think, what was it called, Into the Dark? Hold on. I get it wrong. It could happen. Yeah, Into the Dark.
Okay.
It's the on Hulu. Remember they're going to do like in October, they're coming out with a Halloween movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
In November, they're coming out with a Thanksgiving movie. Well, yeah. I saw a trailer for it finally. And basically the information we get in the trailer is 12 months, 12 twisted tales. So there is going to be a movie every year.
Nice.
And they put up... Huh?
Every month.
Every month. I mean, every month for a year, starting with October. And they showed Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's Eve, April Fool's Day, Valentine's Day. And then they just started putting things up on the screen. So...
Nice.
Yeah. So there's going to be 12 movies.
I'll definitely check them out.
Oh, absolutely.
Some of them will be terrible.
And some of them, like, when they're showing the clips, if you watch it, you go... You'll see people from the cast that they were showing. You're like, oh, I know that. I know that. So it's like they've taken their time. They're doing a good job. They're doing a good cast. And so, yeah.
Nice.
It looks solid.
That's cool.
Yeah, it looks really good, actually. Oh, and I got some news.
Yeah,
you got some news?
I do, too.
Henry Cavill news.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Have you seen any official statements yet?
No.
Okay.
So I've seen ones that said he's out.
Yeah.
I've seen ones that said, no, he's not really out.
Yeah.
And then there's the cryptic thing of him, like, posting a video to his Instagram wearing a Krypton weightlifting shirt and, like, lifting up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, basically, the big rumor is that Henry Cavill's out as Superman.
Right.
They tried to get him to do a cameo in Shazam, and yep. They couldn't line it up because of his filming with Mission Impossible.
The Witcher, actually.
Sorry, The Witcher, yeah. So they couldn't line it up for him doing it. So the rumor is, oh, he's out, because now they're going to go with the Supergirl movie, and they're making her younger, which makes him too old. And then, of course, the Affleck is out, rumors are back in.
Yep.
But, you know, Jason Momoa is still going to be Aquaman. Wonder Woman's still Wonder Woman. They're still doing a Flash movie coming out next year, allegedly. So, like, all right, let's just say, let's go with the rumors that Cavill and Affleck are out.
Did you see who the strongest front runner is to replace Cavill?
Michael B. Jordan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. First off, he was already the Human Torch.
Yep.
And he was already Killmonger.
Yep.
He's already had two runs of superhero stuff.
Right, right.
Secondly, I am not racist.
Nope.
There is no way in hell
anyone
is going to accept
a black Superman.
A black Superman.
Yeah, no.
I mean, if it was Steel, sure.
Sure.
Because that's the character.
Right.
But it would be like if they cast an 80-year-old man as Spider-Man. People would be like, no, that's not Spider-Man. Spider-Man's a teenage kid, maybe a young adult.
Oh, they'll argue, well, the comic book, Miles Morales is Spider-Man and he's black.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's a different, he's Miles Morales. He's not right. Peter Parker.
Right, right.
If they try to say this is Clark Kent
right.
and Michael B. Jordan walks on screen, people are going to lose their shit. I mean, it's absolutely not going to happen. There's no way they can do this.
Yeah.
No way. No, no, no. So, these rumors.
Yeah, so if we take the rumors for the face value they are, which is Cavill and Affleck are out,
yep.
it basically ruins any work they've done on the DC Universe so far.
Yep. Which, let's be honest, they've ruined most of their work anyway.
The unofficial start was Man of Steel.
Yep.
And then they did Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. We all know how we feel about that.
We all know how 99% of the world feels about that.
And they did Wonder Woman. Boy, that was amazing.
Oh, that was so friggin' good.
Yeah. And then they did Justice League. I like Justice League.
Yeah.
I think Joss Whedon had a lot to do with why I do like Justice League. But regardless.
Just to this day, Zack Snyder's still putting stuff out there. You know, this is what it should have been like. This is what I was going to do.
Right.
This is what my cut was going to be.
Yeah.
Aquamartha.
Yeah, basically. So, Justice League helped shore up the issues with Batman vs. Superman and brought us to the point where we have the established Justice League team, and Superman's alive again.
Yep.
And he's
Henry spoiler.
Yeah. And Batman is Ben Affleck, and there's supposed to be a solo Batman movie coming up, but he may or may not be in it, and yada, yada, yada. But regardless, none of these rumors do anything to help the DC Universe. You can't tell me. And I know people will say, oh, people are just hating to hate. I've never heard this much vocalization about the negativity of the Marvel Universe.
Right.
And what they've done. It's like the DC Universe just can't get their shit together is what it comes down to.
That's
and if you you recast Batman and Superman after three established films, not three solo films or whatever, three established films, two of them team-up films, and now going forward, you don't have the continuity like Marvel does. And I think it does nothing but hurt them.
Yep, I agree completely. They're shooting themselves in their foot.
Yeah.
Which, if they had taken the time from the beginning to... Sorry.
It's okay.
If they had taken the time from the beginning to do a slow rollout...
Yes.
Instead of jumping right into Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice with
right.
a Batman that was never established in their cinematic universe...
Exactly. It would have made more sense if they would have cashed... help me out here.
Christian Bale?
Nope. He's not Batman anymore, remember? He gave it up to Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah.
If they would have cast Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Batman, at least that would have made sense.
Right.
We connected it to the Christian Bale movies that we already saw.
Right. Yep.
So, I don't know. Same thing with, and don't forget, Batman was in Batman Affleck because Batman was in Suicide Squad.
I was trying to forget about
Suicide Squad. Well, I'm just saying, though. So there's actually four movies attached to this universe that he's been in.
Yep. This is true.
And are we ever going to get a Black Adam movie?
Supposedly, they said that they weren't going to do it right now because the tone of them is so different. Shazam is childish and goofy. Black Adam is a very serious. And it's true. In the comics, Black Adam was a very serious, you know, character.
Yeah.
He was all about pretending, defending the world and protecting people and stuff like that until he turned. But, yeah, so.
Oh, did you see the images of what Brie Larson has
Captain Marvel. Yep.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not avoiding it, but I'm just skipping over a lot of that stuff because they're like, now we're going to talk to so-and-so. Now we're going to...
Yeah.
I'm going to see the movie anyway.
I saw a thing today. Official trailer release. It's been like Good Morning America.
Yeah, it'll be next week.
Yeah.
But we got to see the Skrulls.
Yes.
The Skrulls look fucking badass.
Yes.
And, you know, we got a few more details that, Carol Danvers is going to be leading a Kree battle unit, because she's half human, half Kree. And she's going to be leading a Kree battle unit against the Skrulls. You know, this is... Oh.
I'm excited.
I am
too. I'm excited. It's going to be great.
So, back to DC for a second.
Oh, sure.
Remember how we talked about how Brendan Fraser is going to be doing a voice and Alan Tudyk is going to be doing a voice for Doom Patrol?
Yes.
Well, they've cast their Dr. Niles, the Chief Calder, who will be running Doom Patrol. Timothy Dalton.
Really?
Yeah. They're really bringing
the
on a lot of...
worst James Bond ever.
Yeah. And that's including George Lazenby.
George Lazenby just had the one movie, and you know why he failed?
He did a good job.
He failed because they made him cry.
Yeah.
James Bond doesn't cry.
No, he
doesn't. They married him, and they made him cry.
Yep.
So that killed him as being Bond.
but they're getting some good star power for this Doom Patrol show. They're really amping it up to be a good addition to their DC universe. I'm still not sold on paying for the monthly fee.
Martin got it.
Oh, he did.
Yeah, one of his in his new comic talk today, he talks about it, but he did it as a video, so I was listening, but didn't really do a whole lot because most of it he was doing was visual, showing you how to use it and the things you can look around on, blah, blah, blah. And so, I mean, his problem he had was that it wasn't working in some – like, I think, like, it wasn't working on his phone, but it was working on his laptop or something like that. Like, he has Chromecast. He wanted to try to zap it onto his TV, and he couldn't do it.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I don't know if they've worked the kinks out or whatever it is from the other day when he posted that all, but, like, you know, it's – I don't know.
Well, they also announced for the Titan show, they're going to be having two Robins. They're going to have Dick Grayson.
Oh, yeah.
And Jason Todd.
Yeah.
That's pretty weird.
Yeah.
Because Jason Todd was Robin, after Dick Grayson was Robin. Like, Dick Grayson went on to be Nightwing.
Yeah.
And he was off doing his own thing in Bloodhaven and such. And then Jason Todd took over, and then there was a problem.
And everyone hated him, and so Joker killed him.
Yeah. Yeah. But then he didn't really, because he came back as the Red Hood. He just tormented him. But, yeah. So, it's going to be interesting to see how they do that. I still really want to see the show. The trailer looks great. Seeing the two of them talking to each other is going to be cool. I don't know if they're going to be enemies or if they're going to be allies. But, again, I'm still not sold on paying the monthly fee.
Yeah.
Until they've got really good stuff there.
Yeah, that's going to be a catch point for me as well.
This was really weird. Netflix saved Designated Survivor. I didn't even know Designated Survivor had gotten canceled because I didn't care about it anymore.
Yeah.
And Netflix just uncanceled it. They took it. So they're going to be producing more episodes.
That show sucks.
Yeah. So I don't know why they're doing that.
But, whatever.
NBC has already upped Brooklyn Nine-Nine to 18 episodes from 13. So they're really banking on this doing well. But then again, it had like five seasons of awesome.
Yeah, so, it's already established show.
Yeah. Venom is officially PG-13.
You think that kills the movie?
Yep.
Yeah.
But the reasoning behind it is solid, and that's that they said that they want him at some point to meet up with Spider-Man and face off against him or whatever. And as it stands now, Spider-Man is under Disney, and it's very much PG-13.
Yep.
So, did you hear about the whole Predator tussle?
No.
The new movie Predator?
Oh, with Olivia Munn in a scene with a guy who was a sex offender?
Yeah. He was an actual predator. Because he lured a 14-year-old girl to his house and did things to her.
Yeah.
And this exploded.
Yeah, I did see that.
Because at first Shane Black was like, hey, he's had a rough past, but I was trying to give him a hand. And then apparently his buddy didn't give him the whole story.
Oh, yeah.
So then the affidavits came out and the police reports came out and Shane Black went, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oops. Because he's done it before. He's put the same guy in multiple movies.
Yeah.
And then apparently the girl who at the time she was a minor, well, now she's not a minor anymore. So she actually came forward and said, hey, this is who I am and this is what happened to me. And so, yeah, that's fucked up.
Well,
yeah. Real life predator.
Real life predator and predator. Well, not anymore. He's on the cutting room
floor. Right.
A deleted scene we won't get to see.
That's right. So the last thing that I had for news.
Oh, and I did read that, like, in his scene, he basically tries to pick up and hit on Olivia Munn.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a creepy, sleazy guy.
Yeah.
So, typecast.
Typecast.
So, this one just came in recently. I'm not sure how I feel about this. Bitsy Tulick is going to be Lois Lane on the DC crossover. The Arrowverse crossover.
Oh.
Juliet from Grimm.
Yes, I heard about that.
So she's going to be our Lois Lane to the guy who's already established as Clark Kent.
And that Clark Kent's not as old as she is.
No, she does present as a very older person, doesn't she?
She does. And that was funny because Martin sent me a message that said, hey, Mike, you must be excited. The girl from Grimm's going to be Lois Lane. And I go, which one, Trouble or? I go, Trouble or the other one? He goes, the other one? I go, yeah.
She was born in 1981.
Really?
Yeah. So she's 37.
Like, she looks late 40s.
She does.
On Grimm, at least.
Yeah.
I think Trouble would be a good Lois Lane.
I think she would, too. She's really tough-nosed and, you know. Yeah.
I miss Grimm.
I miss parts of Grimm.
Not the last season, but the first season especially.
Yes. Back when it knew what it wanted to be.
I may have to buy that.
Yeah.
So I can rewatch that, because it's not streaming anywhere.
That's too bad.
Yeah. Maybe it is on Amazon, actually, but I don't know. Just another reason to get Amazon again.
So. There are a lot of reasons to get Amazon again, my friend. I mean, it's a good platform. It's got some good deals, and I mean,
it's our longest episode in a long time.
The original shows that they come out with are getting better and better.
I heard the Jack Ryan one. A lot of people like it.
Yeah, I still only watched the first episode of it. Wow, we went over 2 hours. Look at that.
Yeah, we haven't done that in ages.
Probably won't again for a while.
Yeah. Oh.
That's all I got.
Okay. Well, I guess until next week, we'll chat with you later. I'm on the Superstar Mal on the Twitter machine.
I'm at the Quantum Geek, G33K.
Also the Twitter machine. And thanks.
Thanks, everybody. Talk to you next week.
Stop the fun stuff.